This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right. What is up, everybody? Whatever day of the week it is that you happen to be listening to this, hope it is going awesome for you. My name is Garnet Lee, and this is the Weekend Confirmed with a alumni all-star show coming at you. Well, Jeff's back, too, from Hawaii.
That's right. Very excited to be back.
No more lazing about on the sunny beaches.
I was working.
Swimming with the dolphins.
Working.
And acting like you're sleeping.
Working.
The best job ever.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, you guys can check that out if you're interested in watching shows about technology in addition to games, and that would be always on CNET.
With
it's
you and
be coming out in a couple weeks. Yeah.
You and Molly and all kinds of cool stuff in the get ready for summer mode.
Exactly.
Then down at the end of the table, we have Weekend Confirmed alumni Zav D'Amatos from Joystick.
Hey, thank you for having me. I was also sleeping or at work, but that's just because I'm terrible at my job.
Aww. Zav's got some brand new specs.
Yeah, specs appeal is what I was telling you before. Yeah. Earlier.
They're very adult.
They are.
They make him look very adult.
But playful around the edges.
Playful around the edges.
Just like my Zav, personality.
Just like Zav.
And there he is, reaching way back into the awesome machine. We have Mr. John Davison here with us, currently from Red Robot, formerly from all sorts of places.
Hello.
I have to stop adding John.
Why am I here?
I have to stop adding John to my address book because his email address changes so often.
There's a couple that stay fairly consistent.
It's true.
Yeah.
I just think it's cool that when I get email from you, Zav, it says from Sparrow, which reminded me that Sparrow was a thing that, you know, Google bought and then.
Really?
Does Google Sparrow own that?
Yeah.
That's what I use for my email client on my iPhone.
Oh. Remember Sparrow was like awesome mail on your iPhone, and then Google bought it and everyone was like, oh, it's going to make the Gmail client so much better. And then, yeah.
They'll close it down like they are Reader and how they did Wave and all those other things that we use that no one else does.
Buzz.
That's a thing. Yeah.
That was a thing.
All right, Google Plus is going to be useful, guys.
Actually, the redesign's really elegant.
It's pretty
cool. Just no one wants to look at it. Anyway, we have a lot of games to talk about. We have all kinds of cool stuff to get into. So the kind of plan I was just laying out for the guys here is that we do an Xbox One catch-up session, then talk about some of the games we've been playing, because there's plenty here to talk about with Fuse and Van Helsing, and John's been playing a bunch on his iPhone, obviously.
I'm excited to hear about Warhammer Quest.
I played some Warhammer Quest.
That's that.
You know, good friends of the Weekend Confirmed show, Rodeo Games and Guildford, made that game. It's on the Hunters and Hunters 2 engine, and it's pretty awesome.
Based on an old board game?
Hey, yep. Ben. What's up? Thanks really for listening, cool. Dude. Anyway, so we'll do all that stuff, and then, you know, we can't have John here and not do E3 predictions. Because he's the master of them. He gets them right.
He's been bragging all day about some awesome predictions.
Oh, shut up.
He has got all the answers right here, and he will... You know,
I gotta come up with something between now and that segment.
He will let the genie out of the lamp in the fourth segment. All right, so all right. Xbox One, you guys, I want to get your impressions since you did not have a chance to respond last week. Jeff, are you happy, positive guy? Are you excited? It has your HDMI pass through.
It does. It does have easy input switching. I got a lot of tweets about that. About how people are like, hey, Jeff, it has that thing that you were complaining about. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, obviously. This is, you know, as they have explicitly said, this was the portion of the E3 press conference that is kind of boring, and I think was...
It was so good that they televised it live then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they broke out the part.
What's your
that
point, John?
Is less exciting. It's interesting to me how all of the stuff that were the biggest concerns of last generation, like backwards compatibility, like making sure it's not too big and bulky for those tiny Japanese living rooms, mm-hmm. all the stuff that they were so concerned about last gen is like no one cares now. It's like, you know what? Let's just make it the biggest black box we've ever seen, and it doesn't matter. And I also think that it's funny that the name
which X-Bone is just hilarious. Like, did nobody really think that through? There's nobody in the room.
There was a rush on X-Bone related URLs. I think. I know people that picked up xboning.com.
Do you want to come X-Bone with me? I got 1,000 friends now.
I totally X-Boned last night.
I think you can already pick it up in the video rental shops.
I honestly think that the decision to go with Xbox One is really came down to what is the one title that no one could possibly predict.
It was that we didn't hear any rumors for that name.
I think, granted, of course not.
I think it's a throwaway.
The name itself.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's all the name itself is just to feed into the marketing plan of like this is the one thing you need in your living room.
That's I think the only reason it's called Xbox One now is to differentiate it from previous things, and that they'll slowly just let it fizzle away and just be Xbox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't say one on anything.
Yeah,
you look
it
at
just
the hardware.
Says Xbox.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what we thought it was going to be called to begin with.
I think there was a panicked marketing meeting. All those people in the expensive suits and Prada jeans sat around like 24 hours before the thing and go, fuck, if we call it Xbox, no one's going to get it.
Yeah.
And we can't call it Xbox 3 because Sony has a PlayStation 4.
Right. And we can't
I can actually hear that. I can hear that. We can't call it Xbox 3.
We can't call it 720 or Infinity because people have been thinking that's
what
we
rush.
We can't do what people
and,
expect.
And they're stupid.
There also was a rush on Microsoft buying the Xbox Fusion URL. And then everyone thought it was Infinity because of that fake Reddit image that people made.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's the name. I wrote this on Twitter after it got announced. Like, I care about the name until I actually play a game, and then I forget what it's called.
Right,
I forget
because,
where the system is. Like,
because
it
all of us are saying we like it's not ridiculous.
Yeah.
For the last 5 years,
Wii U.
We've been talking about we like it's not stupid and ridiculous.
Are we saying Wii U like it's not ridiculous?
I don't think anyone's saying Wii U is might be the problem, but I don't know. I just the name itself. I don't care. That's
yeah. All right. So the system itself. Yeah, I am excited about having a really kick-ass PC in my living room. I'm not...
Oh, wait, are you talking about the PlayStation 4?
Yeah, I'm talking about both. I'm talking about the one console future that is happening
right in
front of us.
That apparently happened when we weren't looking.
Yeah, exactly.
Dennis Dyack is rolling in his grave.
You know
he's actually going to be here,
you know
next,
he's here next week.
Tell him I did not... Do not tell him I said that.
Yeah, so yeah, a really badass PC... Yeah, I'm excited about that.
What about the much talked about, you know, performance drop off PS4 to 360?
No one gives a shit. They give a shit now.
Yeah, what about the performance drop off between the PS3 and the Xbox 360?
Yeah, does anyone notice anymore? Like right now, it's just something for people in games media to talk about.
Also, it's not going to even matter all that much in next generation because they're all based on the same architecture.
Yeah.
It's the PS3 and the Xbox 360 are substantially different, and the PS3 was harder to develop because of that reason. So I don't think you're going to see much of a difference.
No.
Going forward with
especially because it's a ecosystem that's based on third-party games, mm-hmm. and third parties don't give a shit. They want them to look identical. So mm-hmm. it's going to be basically how it's been with the last few years of 360 and PS3, where games pretty much look identical on both platforms.
So then it comes down to exclusives as to what separates the two?
That's it.
I think so, yeah.
And whose exclusives do you have more faith in?
Well, we only know of a few Microsoft ones, and there was a report that they've spent about $1 billion in order to secure a lot of exclusive
Quantum
titles. This is what I'm excited about.
I love Remedy,
about E3.
And I will play anything they make, so that I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about E3 because there's really, I think, going to be some awesome games, and we'll talk about that later in the show, but I think there will be some cool exclusives announced. I think this is the time where, you know, as I said a few weeks ago, like, you know, in the equivalent time of the 360's announcement, it was Mass Effect is going to be a trilogy on this system. Two Human is going to be a trilogy on this system. It's like throwing down the gauntlet, and some of those things happen, some of those things don't. But this is the exciting time when we get to see what the sort of 3 to 5 year roadmap is for some of these big new IP. And I think there will be some at E3. You look super skeptical, Garnett.
No, well, I'm just listening.
I will say Microsoft did something that Sony went and showed the PS4, and they showed things like Infamous and Killzone and franchises that you're already familiar with. Microsoft really made a point to say, like, we have 15 games, 8 of which are new
IPs.
Yeah. 15 exclusive games for the first year, 8 of which are new IPs. And, you know, they didn't really do them themselves a favor by like showing the first game they showed was Forza. But I mean, like, they maybe they should have showed a little bit more in that. But I think that if you were to take all of the stuff that they showed at that reveal event and put it into their E3 press conference and focus on things like the new Kinect stuff, the new TV stuff, all of those things, and put it in the E3 press conference, people would be even madder. Whereas now they've freed themselves, I think, to just talk about video games, which is what they said that they wanted to do.
That's probably accurate. That's probably accurate. I think the other thing is, though, you know, it depends on which side of the trust fence you're going to fall on. Most people in the core gaming community hear that, oh, there's going to be 15, you know, exclusives and 8 new IP, and they start ticking off how many of these will be throwaway
Kinect Adventure Four,
right?
Yeah, but two or three out of 15 being, you know, big AAA awesome core titles.
We take some pretty reliable stabs at guessing what the non-exclusive ones are going to be. We already know one of them, and another one's a sure bet, and there'll be a Halo. Mm-hmm. So Halo and Forza, there's two. We've only got to come up with a few more, and we've got the whole list.
actually, a couple of the listeners have done that in the thread from last week's show. You know, it's pretty easy to tick off through Kinect Adventures, Kinect Sports.
Well, I don't think they're going to do that.
No. I think one of the rumors that I had heard, too, is that because they have this big partnership with EA that they sort of only talked about a little bit with the sports stuff,
right,
that there's some rumor that there's going to be timed exclusivity with the Respawn game. Yeah. There's also a rumor that the Mirror's Edge game might be, Mirror's Edge 2 might be three Xbox One exclusive.
Yes.
Yeah. I like how EA's, like, someone in their web division sort of messed up and accidentally let the support page for Mirror's Edge 2 publish for a millisecond. Yeah. Like, you can't let something like that publish for a millisecond on the net. Someone will see it and they'll be like,
I would just love to
Mirror's Edge 2.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall of the guy who's like constantly typing in different URLs to look for those things. Like, how did you even find that stuff? Like, that was pretty.
Who knows? Pretty
funny. I could have been just like a Google
alert
for that name.
Yeah. So I think with that event, I mean, I feel like we're kind of very late to the party.
Cause
you are late. I'm just letting you get in some voice before
I came away from it feeling like, okay, great, the hardware is comparable to the other thing, and they'll explain what's going to happen with the game. What I felt bad about was how what was left of the soul of Microsoft's gaming division has just gone.
What do you mean?
So I remember when the original Xbox One came out.
The Xbox One
and
One?
And it was...
The first one?
The excitement the first Ed one. Freeze and...
When Xbox Classic was launched, it was Ed Freeze, Jay Allard, Seamus Blackley, and they came out. And these were guys that really believed in what they were doing and were trying to prove a point. And they were like, we can do this. We can build a games console aimed at the Western market. And we're gonna take what we've learned from PC and what we've learned from all of our partners around the games business, and we're going to build the perfect box for them right now. Mm-hmm. And it was product guys talking about product, talking about what gamers wanted.
Which is what Mark Cerny did for Sony.
Right.
Yep.
That event was Don Matrick and his floppy hair introducing the Xbox, and then a bunch of guys in suits and expensive jeans who didn't look like they were invested in the product at all, just wandering up on stage and reading from a teleprompter. There was no soul to it at all. And, like, I don't feel inclined. Like, they have a guy on staff that people still believe in, Phil Harrison. They should have put Phil on stage, because even though he's not as much of a product guy as he was, he still conveys that, but really give a shit.
He was clearly the last person to get the talking points, though.
I know. Yeah. And it was like, I could just imagine, like, Xbox PR big, somebody shut the fuck up. Get that guy on the phone right now. Don't say anything. Yeah. And then you got all the PR, like, it's one of many potential scenarios, which, like, sounds like such a, I've sat in meetings where lines like that have come up.
That was the biggest issue with that. Regardless of what you think of what they revealed, or if you think of the system, they released, probably the most confusing release of information I've ever seen for any product.
And to turn around and to actively blame the games media by the way, we're just reporting what you're telling us.
I think the arrogance of the event was, we're going to do a mainstream event that we're going to televise, and we're going to talk to a mainstream audience, and we're going to worry about the core later. And I think what they completely ignored was the fact that, even though to what they're aiming for, gamers is something of a minority at this point with that announcement, we're infinitely more vocal than everyone else. So we took up all of the conversation bandwidth,
right,
and they didn't have an answer for half the questions. They should have gone in prepared for, I mean, like, it's the third third one they've done, right? Like, they know what people get hung up on.
Yeah.
And they weren't ready.
Well, and as a lot of listeners point out, it's nice to make a mainstream pitch, but the mainstream isn't the person who's buying a console on launch day. People who are buying the console on launch day are your core fans. And you were ostensibly talking to your core fans with the assembled media that's there, and yet weren't ready to answer their questions and didn't package
so
well.
Microsoft reps were pulling people aside after the event and going, just wait till E3, we're going to knock your socks off. And it's like, so how are you going to manage the conversation between now and then? Because it's going to get difficult.
Yeah. I think if they really wanted to do the mainstream reveal, they shouldn't have invited any press because they weren't prepared for any press to have questions for them. They didn't want...
Right.
Every time that we would sit down with one of the executives and ask them a pointed question about something very specific to how the hardware functions, they didn't have a response. And they'd always push it to wait for E3, wait for
Nobody E3. Asks Apple these questions. Why are you asking us?
It was just... I think that they really wanted to wow people and didn't think it through. They didn't actually have any sort of... plan as to how they were going to execute on some of these ideas.
But to the Apple point, and I think the heart of that event was a big fuck you to Apple, like, because they are ahead of Apple in the living room in terms of just mind share. The difference between Apple and Microsoft is that when someone asks Apple that question, they have an answer.
Yeah.
Even if it is, that's not important, shut the fuck up.
And they all give the same answer.
Yeah. Not, there's some guy in the UK said this, like, do you want to get your story straight before you answer me?
Yeah.
You know, one of the places that this really kicks in is then, something's been controversial since then, which is all the discussion over the cloud computing capabilities. Now, I brought this up last week, and then a bunch of people were like, oh, you're believing it. I don't know that I necessarily believe in it. I just wanted to bring up that they were pushing it.
It reminds me of when all the PlayStation cells were going to talk to each other. Yeah. Remember that?
Infinite power.
That's a good way to put it.
Your microwave and your toaster.
Everything's
going
to
have a cell in it,
and your toaster's going to be contributing to your rendering engine.
Exactly. We're going to deconstruct DNA with it. It'll be sweet.
So, you know, they updated. They have been parceling out little bits and pieces of messaging now, which you ask how they're going to manage it. So the latest one is that they are partitioning for every game another 2 times the power of your Xbox One on the server for your game. So, John, whenever you're playing Halo 5, it'll be, you'll have your Xbox One, but you'll have the equivalent of 2 more Xbox Ones in the cloud.
Wait, okay, so why are you inherently cynical about that?
Because as has been pointed out by a lot of folks, in the current landscape of technology, there's only so many things you can offload in a low latency environment of gaming, and it really hasn't been proven yet. I mean, it is. I'm being a little extra cautious, I guess. Like
the idea,
it is the
in
cell,
theory,
it is the
that's
promise
awesome.
Of the cell. In theory, it is awesome. It's completely unproven. Cloud computing for this sort of technology is completely unproven. When we've proven, like with Gaikai, that you can run a game remotely, but the whole game is running someplace else. So all I'm doing with that is I'm shooting, you know, controller inputs out and getting back a video feed.
Right.
But if you're talking about like spitting out part of all my code that I'm calculating and bringing it back in all in real time, that's a lot to take care of. There've been, you know, a couple of articles about the theoretical bandwidth it would take and the sort of response times you would need to do it that have been very critical of it. I'm not going to say that I'm not a tech expert, so I can't say that, but I can say it's unproven. And to make it this big thing that you're talking about when people are sort of inherently skeptical of the cloud, it's made fun of all the time in the first place, is a weird move. Like, say my box is powerful enough. Don't say, oh, it's going to be so powerful.
I think it's
powerful.
Just smoke right now. I mean, like, we have no...
So it's like smog.
Smog.
It's like a smoky cloud.
It's a smog, yeah. But we have no indication of what the box can really do. Anyway, I mean, the Call of Duty demo was canned. The Quantum Break thing was half video. The Forza thing. I mean, I don't know about you, Garnet, but with racing games, I'm starting to become sort of blind to when people come on stage and go, oh, look, we can render every bit of
sort
the
of.
Carbon fiber. And it's just like, they all look the same now, you know? It looks like a real car. Okay, great.
I can't wait till they become even more than real.
Yeah, it's hyper real.
Yeah.
I'm eagerly awaiting someone to come on stage to show me a racing game where they talk about the racing.
Yeah.
Where they talk about how great a racing experience
well, they're
I'm
like,
have.
This is how we, like, I mean, they're going off, but the Gran Turismo stuff, I was just like, when are you going to, like, show me that you've actually thought about how we're going to play this thing?
Yeah.
You know? Like, because the last few have been a bit boring.
So here's some of the
folks, six coming this fall.
Here's some of the things that folks in the listeners have been saying. Warren G 1983 says he's going to wait on either console and instead play through the huge catalog of games that he's accumulated from sales and impulse buys, which I think a lot of people are in that position right now.
Yep.
Which leads him to skip a year ahead or so in his thinking and consider his options. So here's where he wound up. He said, "My big question is, why will I use my PS4 aside from playing its exclusive titles? I'll be gaming mostly on my Steam box." Mm-hmm. "And watching TV and playing exclusives on my Xbox One. If you ask me, the PS4 needs something that sets it apart." And I think his implication, or the rest of his explanation, was that the television feature of Xbox One gives it this extra thing that sets it apart and makes it the preferred console.
Yeah,
of
but I don't know about you.
Overlay.
I only watch my DVR, and the Xbox One can't control my DVR.
Yeah, and I just don't give a shit about the Xbox One TV stuff because it's just an overlay on what you already own. Like, you have to plug in your cable box to give it that functionality. So I'm going to use my Xbox just to look at a sweet guide or switch between all these things.
But what if it is a cool sweet guide?
But, like, to me, it doesn't matter. If I want to watch something, it's going to be on my DVR, and it wouldn't be able to control that stuff. You know, it's
I made this argument, too.
But what if people don't watch television the same way that I think Microsoft wants them to, which is going back in time?
So here's there has been a strong current of people who contradicted that and said, actually, there's still a lot of us that do watch television like that.
Mm. I also like the fact that with that overlay, you can have the notifications and messaging, and like, because it's a layer on top of TV when you are watching media, you get all of that. And I think the idea, you guys a few weeks ago had talked about which was going to be input one, and I think they made a big play for why they would be the main input.
Mm. Yeah, Chester said that. He's like, every business realizes there's big bucks to be made in being the first stop when someone turns on their entertainment device, and this is Microsoft's angle.
Did you see Comcast actually announced a box called the X1 this week?
Oops.
Yeah, in Canada, Rogers has a box called the Next Box.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But the X1 is basically Comcast's like connected cable box with like apps and stuff, and yeah, X1.
Can we make like a bone box next, or just a bonox? I don't know. Some kind of weird
bollocks.
Like, bollocks. The bollocks box.
Bollocks.
I think actually DevSword, by the way, wrote a couple of three long treatises on Xbox One. He claimed to have been fueled by caffeine. But anyway, this insight that I'm going to draw attention to sort of mirrors what Zav was talking about, and about, you know, the outdated or outmoded thinking of the television approach. He brought up a TechCrunch article that had compared the Xbox One to the Spruce Goose. Now, if you remember the Spruce Goose,
that
was the big plane that Hughes was making to solve the problem of moving troops and materials during the Second War. And the whole thing took so long to build that by the time it was even being tested, the one time it was flown, it was like sorely out of date. It wasn't even needed because the war was over. The war was over. It was like flying a plane with props when everyone was flying jets, and it had just been completely superseded. And so he says that it's like the Jetson. It's like the Jetsons. It paints a retro fantasy version of the future that doesn't innovate. So he compared that to Sony's approach, and he brought out some good points by comparison. He said, Sony said things like, "We'll show you how the living room is no longer the center of the PlayStation ecosystem. The gamer is, and how ease of access, regardless of location or device, has been made an absolute priority." Stark comparison of those points. I actually like the Sony philosophy piece. Now, whether you buy into it or not, but I like this idea of the gamer being the most important part and not being so worried about owning the living room so much as like being the right accessible thing that I can get to when I want to.
Right.
I think the approach that I'm more curious about is Microsoft. They opened that new studio. I think it was like Xbox Studios. It's actually like a television studio where they're going to produce content. I think plugging in existing devices you already have is interesting enough. I mean, if you watch television then and you have an Xbox, that's going to be your number one input, and that's fine. But I think what if they take the Netflix approach of creating original content that you could only find on that box as a bonus to all of those things, then I think that is a smarter way to do things. And there is a little bit of that with the Remedy game. There is a television component to it that they're producing. There's Halo, the television series, which obviously will be huge because the other thing that they did, Forward Into Dawn, was popular as well. I mean, that is more interesting to me when they're creating that content. But just saying like that, those things you already own, you plug it into the back of this machine and it just houses everything in this one box. I mean, that to me is not really interesting. And that's the only thing we could really talk about because that's what they spent the most time talking about at the conference.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think they definitely will do increasingly more original programming in video, and that they'll do a channel, and that'll become a big thing for them. I think that it has to, right? It has to. Like, that would be another piece of the puzzle for them, so to say, and why television viewing through Xbox One is great. And there's things that they could do there. They could be like the new G4 gamers television all around Xbox.
Well, I mean, in 5 to 10 years, there may not be a cable way that we buy it now. It may be an a la carte kind of universe where you're watching through some sort of box that lets you access the internet to get all of your television type content.
That would be a pretty monstrous industrial institution to bring down.
But that's exactly what all these companies are trying to do.
Bills being introduced into Congress like recently. I mean, it's getting chiseled away at.
Even a company like HBO that says that they've wanted to keep it tied to cable subscribers forever. They've even talked a little bit about changing their mind. And that's huge. Like when HBO, everyone looked at what they were saying about how television and entertainment was brought into the home as draconian. It was this old way of thinking. And when they start changing their mind, I think that's where we're going to go.
But I want to talk about another thing that's changing, and it's obviously a major sticking point for a lot of people, and that's that the whole used games issue that
we talked about that a lot last week.
I know. I listened. It was a very good episode, actually. It missed a certain personality, though. Anyway.
Was there somebody that wasn't here last week?
Yeah.
Sleeping on a beach?
Yeah. Obviously, it's the kind of thing that upsets a lot of people, and myself included, and I think that I really haven't heard the argument expressed in the way that I feel is accurate. I think everybody's talking about people want to buy used games. I don't think that's really it. I think the thing that irks me, and I think probably a lot of people, is that this thing that you purchased inherently doesn't have any value after you purchased it. So it's not more about buying a used game. It's about selling a game back and having some value for it, which – Microsoft is saying there will be a solution to that. But I think that's where the scary part comes in, is like people are like, well, I fund my new game purchases with selling back.
Absolutely. There's a long thread in the show comments from last week about this. Someone brought this very something.
And I think that's really the thing that irks people. And it's certainly worrisome.
Said that they are not a used game buyer, actually. They only want to buy new games.
Right.
But that because they can buy a game for $60 and then at some point down the road sell it back for $25 or $30.
But how long did it take for this to fizzle out on PC? Like, it took a while, right?
What, used games?
Well, yeah, I mean, like the just and the and
we
the,
never really had a used game market in PC,
but it a long time ago now, the idea of there being used games on PC disappeared because you were buying a license and you were borrowing it indefinitely from the publisher.
It's not even that. I think this is, we are at the beginning, and this is going to sound really esoteric, and I'll probably get ripped a new one for it, but we're at the precipice of a real new paradigm. I think throughout modern human history, we're used to having this idea that we have things, we have objects, and I can give it to you for value. I trade you a pelt and you give me some corn. You know what I mean? And that's what human civilization is based on. And you're laughing
at me
already.
Microsoft currency.
But in the information age, we decouple value between a physical object and the information that is used to create it. Yeah. And as we progress to, as these 3D printers become more common and as you're able to create something at home, and what is the value of that object is who thought of it, who gave you the schematics to just manufacture it in your home, there will no longer be value in an object. There will only be value in the idea of the object. And that's happened first with music, and it's happening with media, and it's going to start happening with physical objects as well, I believe. And I think that we're just in a paradigm shift right now.
But
these companies
in video games, console gaming is very late to that transition. I mean, it happened in PC ages ago.
Yeah.
It never happened in mobile because it started that way.
Right.
But what Microsoft is trying to say, and let me preface this by saying, I agree, it sucks. It sucks for people who are used to the old paradigm, like myself. But what Microsoft is trying to tell you and convince everyone, and that all of these companies are going to move this direction over the next few years, in not just in video games, but in every kind of big corporate media, is this disc isn't anything.
No.
It's just a delivery
device. It's a delivery mechanism.
Well, that's what
envelope,
the Xbox One games are.
It's an envelope for you to get the real stuff that has value, which is the bits. And
it's your hall pass.
What, Garnet?
You go ahead. No, bits is what Phil Harrison said. Yeah.
That's why I'm quoting that. And I know people are going to say, oh, you're a shill for these companies. I'm just trying to interpret what's happening around.
No, I don't think you're advocating it. I think you're expressing what's going to happen.
One of the differences for me about the era of PC games that you're talking about and the modern era of console games is that there were far fewer PC titles in the market space at that time. Right. And there was a predominance of the era of games that were big, long, meaty experiences. And so at the time, their $40 or $50 games were oftentimes 30, 40, 50, 60 hour and more experiences. Mm-hmm. Now we have this era of games getting down 6 to 8 hours, and yet there's still $60 experiences, right? So it's like $60, there's 6 to 8 hours, and there's a new one every week, if not a new two or three of them every week. And that's a different, that's an entirely different sort of economy for someone to invest in their hobby. You know, if it was, you know, oh, I buy Command and Conquer this month, and maybe in a couple of months, there's something else coming out that I want. That's something.
What's the top end pricing that's got to change for it, for the real shift to happen? Is that it can't be big, expensive productions that you're dropping $60 on, because if the thing was more expensive to produce than a $60 cover fee for your ticket in is going to pay for, then carve it up into pieces and charge more for it.
Yeah. All right. I will let Runner Matt wrap things up here, because this is kind of funny. It says, the heart of the problem with the One is that it's designed for a single, childless person who lives in a larger house or apartment in a large American city, who plays games alone, who has super fast internet, the latest and greatest tech, a deluxe cable package, is an NFL fan who plays fantasy football. Oh, it sounds like probably your basic Microsoft employee.
Yeah, but I take issue with half of those assumptions.
I do too. I thought it was a funny quip. That's all. Which assumptions are you can, if you want?
I don't think it's aimed at single childless people at all. I think, in fact, they're looking at, you know, it being a family box, you know, and
I think they
primary thing plugged into the TV.
And the whole messaging of the Kinect all for a long time has been, it's a big family thing, and, you know, sit on your couch with your wife and your kids and use it that way. Anyway, all right, stick around. When we come back on the other side, we have games to talk about, like Fuse and Van Helsing, and I don't know, we can go back to Call of War as Gunslinger, and I'm sure that these guys are going to talk about Tetris Blitz, because everyone who plays it seems to get addicted to it. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever, and Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like BioShock Infinite, Injustice Gods Among Us, Tomb Raider, and Dead Island Riptide. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want. There are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, you send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. And now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play. It's free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like a game you're playing, all you do is click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, so chances are if you were hankering to play something new this week, you took a long look at Fuse and then couldn't decide what to do because the reviews are all over the board. And I played it, Jeff's played it, Zav's played it, and we definitely have mixed opinions about it as well.
You liked it a lot.
A lot is an overstatement.
You liked it.
I like it. I was telling John while we were driving over here, like, the thing about Fuse, it's interesting to me. By the way, Fuse was Project Overstrike, and I think that this is one of those weird games that really tells an interesting story in the development world, because we saw the, you know, the Target video that they put out originally, and you were like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, these have some characters. It was like this cool sort of, like, I don't know, how would you, it's not comic book, but it had
sort of an Incredibles-y kind of look.
That's a good way to put it,
right?
Yeah. Had like a very cool, like, vibe, like Incredibles meets Mission Impossible, and who knows what else kind of cool spy fiction could be in there, right? And then somewhere along the lines, there is a crisis of creativity, and the end result is a game that is character focused, and the box art has the heads chopped off. So it's kind of bizarre. And it is, as I was describing to John, like, it is, as you would expect from Insomniac, an incredibly well crafted game. And by that, I mean that It controls very well. The weapons, as you would expect from an Insomniac game, a lot of fun. I'm sure we'll talk about those. The level designs are nice. The bosses that they have in there, they're like fun to fight against. Everything is fun to play and well put together and well crafted and absolutely devoid of personality.
I'd love to hear...
Just like, no personality. Like, so what, devoid of personality.
What happened in the conversation where they clearly just pussied out and who was responsible for that, whether it was when they signed with EAP or whether they were like, guys, this is starting to look a lot like Team Fortress. Or like, I mean, like, I'm just curious as to what the spark that kind of
lit the fuse.
Yeah. Lit the fuse. Hey.
Oh. I think people are not remembering the reaction to the original video at all, because when that was first shown off, people just claimed it was another Team Fortress clone or it was looking like something like that. People didn't really seem interested in it.
I was interested in
it. Then they changed. I mean, if you go back and read a lot of the comments of the stories when that was first revealed, and then they changed it, and all of a sudden it was like someone slapped everyone's grandmother or something. Like they people just got so angry that they changed it because they thought this had so much personality. And I think honestly, to me, it seems like something that they were told to change because that was what EA wanted them to do in terms of EA partners. I feel like that company is so good at creating a universe and characters that are charismatic and you know, something that you want to go visit and you know, characters that you enjoy playing with or meeting. But yeah, this game doesn't have any character at all. It feels like, and especially this was their big showpiece. This is the first multiplayer platform game that Insomniac has ever developed. They wanted this to be a big hello to a brand new audience for them. And it delivered a game that I felt to be extraordinarily boring.
I was going to buy it and I didn't. And because it was Insomniac, I was like inexplicably feeling that I kind of had to buy it on PS3. Like,
oh, yeah. That's funny.
And it was like, I was like, well, should I buy it? I ended up asking on Twitter, like, if I'm going to buy this thing, what other people? Because I want to be able to get a game with other people. And it seemed like most people were going to get it on 360. But then there was definitely a wave of apathy that then followed that, which was sort of like, yeah, well, the guns are cool.
The guns are cool.
The levels are great.
And it's like, neat that you can hop in and out of any character of the four. Yeah.
But there's no real incentive to do so.
Well, to try the other guns, because you can't have... They have a special gun.
Well, yeah. That is the difference between this game and their other games, whereas all the other games have all these amazing guns that you can play with. This really locks everyone down into their own character class and those own specific special weapons.
I kind of like that kind of... What was the Battlefield? The one where you could zap between...
Bad Company?
No, Modern Combat.
The one where you could zap between...
Battlefield 2 Modern Combat, yeah.
I like that mechanic in that, where you could kind of hop around the battlefield and like to sort of manage the different skills. I think it's an interesting way of managing the problem of building a co-op game and then you playing it on your own.
Right. Because here they do... I mean, so don't get me wrong. They actually do some very cool co-op play moments where they'll have, you know...
Four people lifting a door.
Ooh. No.
Is there a thing where you flip a switch and then I go through the thing?
But it's on the other side. It's on the other side of the wall. See?
Genius.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're insulting it.
No, I'm just...
There are some things that, while they are easily thought of, they're done very well. And there are a couple of sections where they pair people off, two of the squad go off and do one thing, and the other two of the squad do another thing, and they're working in support for one another. And that, you know, that harkens back to me of playing Resident Evil together with somebody else, where you had that,
or
say,
even
like
some of the more kind of convoluted Borderlands things, right?
Yeah.
Where you needed to work as a team.
And so that part all works well. What I was saying about the flashing piece is that to not realize that I've talked about this co-op thing a long time, and we have not yet mastered how to get people to play cooperative games in a nice organic way. This is still another one of these games where there's four players and you'd have to like set up and go, okay, so guys, when can we all get together and play Fuse? And like, how long can you play? So can you play Saturday? No, I can't play Thursday. Like, you have to get your team together, right? Mm-hmm. And then people don't just go out, and there are pickup games out there. Obviously, you can use Xbox Live matchmaking and people will do that, but that misses a big point of the fun of playing that sort of intermeshed team support thing. So why do they not think about, then, if I'm playing it solo and I've got these players, what encourages me to pop around from character to character? I mean, there's a couple of times where I popped around to Crossbow Guy. I mean, really, literally, I should have written their names down. Is it Jacob? Maybe?
I don't know. Who knows?
They're that bad.
It's Jacob Crossbow Guy.
And then there's the guy with the big chin.
Right. So, and I hopped into Crossbow Guy because
that's,
I needed...
Ted Shieldies.
because I needed his, you know, I needed his range accuracy to help work on a boss. And they're like, oh, this works great.
There's a girl, too. What does she
do? There are two girls.
There are two women. Yeah. That's one thing about the box art that I thought was really disappointing. She, you have this really multicultural, multi-gender group of characters, and they cut off all the heads, and you could barely tell who's who. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
One's redheaded.
Also, it's called...
They're all red on the box because they're all on fire or whatever the hell
Fuse, which is the blandest name that they could have...
Overstrike was a much better... And they still have all of that terminology in the game.
Yeah, they're still part of the Overstrike team or something like that.
It's almost like the team making the game were like, fuck those guys. Like, still Overstrike.
It's too bad.
My point was, though, that there seems like there was an opportunity there to encourage you to use that fast switching between characters for more than just a reason of, I want to go play with her gun, or I want to go play with his gun, right? Yeah. And that's cool because the guns are the best part. Like, this Fuse stuff, the loose plot of the story is that there's this crazy powerful elemental energy source that's been weaponized over the past decades, and it gets stolen, and it's going to be sold to the highest bidder.
And there's aliens or something involved? I don't know. It's in the trailer.
Oh, okay. You know, people get mad when you do spoiler stuff. Anyway.
I'm still reading the novelization, so please don't.
I'm sorry.
I do want to say that I think that this is going to be a problem.
You know what I just laughed about? What the hell was the name of that Rebellion-made game that came out at the beginning of PS3 that Ubi is going to publish? Remember it had, like, the Nectar stuff in it?
Haze.
Yeah. With the yellow helmets.
I finished that game.
And then everything...
Why?
Everything was hexagons. In the game.
That game was terrible.
So at least
I'm sorry, that was an awful game.
But it does stink of haze, doesn't it? Not even a whiff. It just reeks of it.
Uses
of
the
this
same
sort
color
of like
scheme.
We kind of got halfway through and then sort of lost interest.
I just feel like
they didn't. The game plays. What I wanted to say is the game is really fun. The weapons are awesome. They're really fun to play with. All of the guns. That uses Fuse stuff have the ability to have special effects on them. So, like, one of the guns is a weapon that as you land more hits with it, it's like a submachine gun sort of gun, it starts to crystallize an enemy. And as it crystallizes an enemy, if you can build it up and chain it, then you can, like, crystallize multiple formations of them. And then once they're crystallized, you can go and break them.
This is what I don't get in terms of the narrative. So you're trying to get this substance, which I think is called Fuse.
It is.
And you're supposed to get it away from these people because it's this energy source that's really important.
But it's what's in all the guns.
But it's what you use for your ammo. So you're basically using everything. Like, by the end of the game, it's like
there's
depleted.
None left.
There's like, it's done.
It's gone. Problem solved.
That doesn't make any sense.
I like
sense
how they
to
all,
me.
The four of them, too, run into the room and they find the four guns and they're like, I'm picking this one and I'm never sharing it with anyone. This is my gun forever.
This is a problem that I think that we're going to lose in the next generation and that EA is trying to do with Need for Speed, the new one. I can't remember what the subtitle
Rivals.
Because what they're doing is the game is constantly connected and there is no selection screen for multiplayer. So you're playing your game, people come into your game. It's an active world.
That's cool.
And I think that a game like this, 4-player co-op, if you're connected to the internet, you have Xbox Live, you're on PSN or whatever, then you're playing the game and instead of populating AI, people just join your game. Like Journey.
The
people
crossing.
Just show up into your game.
It was the promise of the crossing.
Well, the promise of the crossing also was that you would jump between the bad guys. Yeah. Well,
also the best bits from Need for Speed World before they canned it, right?
I think they still... I think they
closed the studio, so I assume the game's gone.
But wait, why is that better?
Well, I think that's better than... Because we had this conversation about this game would probably function better if you exclusively played it as a co-op experience. I didn't like it, but I played it single player. A lot of people say that that's not the way to play this game, but it is an option.
I don't know, man. I kind of feel like... I was playing it co-op and...
You're playing couch co-op.
I was. It was crappy. But I have to say that I had the most fun while I was playing it by jumping around. And if you're playing with four other human beings, you can't jump around.
I think that the locking...
Between characters is what I mean.
Locking characters down to one specific weapon is so that people can, like... Learn is so that people work together better in the co-op.
Yeah, but what if you don't get your favorite? What if you're like, are you going to go play? Or
but
you
I'm
keep
saying,
playing? Like, I don't want to play
exclusively,
Shield.
Exclusively, if it's exclusive when you're playing connected and you get to jump online, then it would be a different. That limitation, I think, is there because they want people to work together. Whereas I think in the next generation, where you're putting people into these constant co-op experiences, it might benefit the fact that people will actually try to work together more. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen, but I think that limitation...
I think the reason it worked in Journey is because my experience had nothing to do with your experience. It was additive if you were there.
Well, I'm just talking about the technology.
Around.
I'm not saying how the game functions. But right. I will say that playing it single player doesn't work as well as co-op, because those weapons are sort of meant to work in tandem. Like, I'm using
There are lots of chains. That's really cool. Yeah. Really cool chains.
When you play by yourself, you don't really get that effect, because the AI doesn't work with you in that same regard.
You can actually...
I mean, you can accidentally do it, no, or you can do it yourself.
That's what I've been doing. So that's kind of fun, but like they don't ever teach you any of that. It's like they don't show you how that could be cool or what combos would be fun. Mm-hmm. They just like it's there, and yeah, you can actually use the warp gun and get a bunch of people into warp, and then jump over to this shatter gun, and then like throw that in there and get like the explosion, set them off.
Like how it shows you who's in warp and all the warpy goodness that's happening.
The
warp is happening.
The thing about the weapons,
warp stuff.
The warp gun, by the way, is a gun that, much like the other gun, like when you hit someone with enough of the bullets of it, it opens like a quantum singularity on top of them, which is kind of cool. And you can create, and you can like load up multiple enemies with the beginnings of a singularity, and then get one of them pushed over the top, and it'll like cascade effect through them. I think part of the thing about what you were describing, like with how weird it is that they just go in and be like, "This is my gun, I'm keeping it for forever," is indicative of like how just the characters are just paper flat. They are nothing other than hangers on which to hold a gun.
Yeah.
And because of that,
the guns have more personality than the people.
The guns have way more personality than people. And because of that, there is no like, why did this person decide that they needed to pick up this gun? Whereas if they had given them personality, maybe it would have made sense.
Which
maybe you would have said,
which is also sad, because the performances in the game are actually really, like, the voice acting is
voice
great.
Nolan North, everybody.
And like, and it's
Nolan North, isn't it?
Who knows?
He plays all four characters.
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
It's him and Troy Baker.
But it has all of the parts. It's like they weren't stuck together right.
Yeah, they need to fuse them together better.
Oh my god, you are
stop
I'm still
today.
Here, everybody.
Stop.
I have a show tonight. Hey, I got a much better game to talk about.
I'm trying to see if Nolan North is in Fuse. So
oh, I guarantee you,
I recognize his voice. I'm pretty sure it was him. Van Helsing.
Yeah, you love it. And it was recommended to me, and I didn't even know it existed.
Is it
based on the movie?
It's The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing. So much, not actually the... What was that movie? It was just called Van
Helsing. It was
Helsing.
Just called Van Helsing.
And it had what's-his-face in it?
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. He dreamed a dream. Anyway, it's Diablo done really, really well for $15.
With vampires.
With vampires and werewolves and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, Diablo is demons. It's not that much of a stretch.
Who made it?
Who did make it? That's a good question. I don't remember. I don't know. But it's $15. I got it for $13 because there was a sale. Mm-hmm. It's
show off.
Excellent. The mechanics all work really well. You have a ghost companion, sort of like how Torchlight handles your animal companion, but this is even cooler because it's a ghost, and you can equip her with stuff, and you can upgrade her with stuff, and give her skills, and dictate her behavior. So if you want her to hang back and attack with range, or you want her to get there and sort of tank for you so you can be ranged, your guy switches back. It's very Torchlighty in the fact that you switch back and forth with a button press between your melee weapon and your ranged weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that on the fly really quickly. It's got a really cool leveling mechanic. You can acquire these perks and skills, and you get to outfit your guy. I mean, there's only one character class. Right. It's Van Helsing.
Right. So it's kind of like Demon Hunter in Diablo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But you can really customize your playstyle because his upgrade path is so varied.
So there's been a lot of Diablo clones lately. How would you compare it to Torchlight and the Marvel thing that I can remember the name of?
Marvel Heroes?
Heroes, yeah.
I played a bunch of Marvel Heroes. I played a bunch of Torchlight. I think this is right up there quality-wise with those. The graphics are fantastic in this game. I prefer that more realistic style to Torchlight's.
Yeah.
It was made by Nerdcore Games.
I was just looking at that. I was like, holy, like, wow.
Makers of The King's Crusade.
Neocore. Yes.
What did you call them?
Nerdcore. That's a band, I think. Nerdcore.
And its actually full name is The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing.
Yeah, I said that. But
pay attention, guys.
I was looking it up for him.
Checking his emails.
It is easily as good as those. The storyline is kind of fun. You know, you're not
is
really going to get
it
much
old
out
school
of
it. Van Helsing or contemporary Van Helsing?
I believe contemporary. Oh, really? Brewery, but I don't know the difference per se.
Well, no, I mean, is it set in whatever 19th century or?
Oh no, yeah, it's set in 19th century, but it's sort of got some steampunkiness to it. Okay. Like there's robots or steampunk robot kind of deals happening. Mm. It's excellent, and for $15, I've been having a friggin' blast with it.
Cool.
It really
is Diablo.
The trailer.
So what's the weaponization then if you're not in a traditional... I mean, this is much more of a gothic-y sort of...
Swords, and crossbows, right?
Yeah, swords, and then you have, like, guns. You'll have rifles and pistols, and you'll swap back and forth between those.
What's the most rewarding that you've been playing with? I mean, does it...
I have been almost exclusively ranged, and I've been leveling up my range so that basically, like, every ranged hit gives me mana so I can spam my... right button magic attacks, and I have like AOE, like every bullet will explode and kill the things around it. And it does, it does the Diablo Torchlight thing where it throws dozens and dozens of enemies at you at a time in packs. And I mean, it's very Diablo. You'll get enemies that are fast or fiery or whatever,
So I maybe you mentioned this and I missed it, but is it single player only?
No, it has a very robust online component co-op.
Is everyone Van Helsing?
I didn't jump into co-op, but I believe so. There's no option to not be Van Helsing, so I would imagine everybody is.
Different colored Van Helsings?
Yeah. I mean, you have equipment that you... And you can change the color of your dude when you make him.
Mm-hmm.
His outfits and all that. And you get equipment that shows up on your guy. And
I would say I was going to download it because I like to play some of the stuff you guys are playing just so we can have a conversation about it. And I watched the trailer for that, and it did it no favors. I thought it was a... tower defense game. That's what it looked like in the trailer, and I'm like, I don't want to play this. And but I like Diablo. I remember we
should play together.
Used to play Diablo all the time.
I really want to progress farther. I think level 9 or something like that. So I'm still early on, but I'm having a freaking blast with it. It's great. I mean, those are the games I love most. I love isometric top down dungeon crawling Diablo type games. So this is right in my wheelhouse, but.
If the loot's there, I could go home and pick it up because the $15,
dude.
$15, like that's
yeah. Do you, I know this is blasphemy for that kind of game, but it doesn't have controller support.
Wish it did. I really liked that in Torchlight.
The first Torchlight had great controller support, and then they didn't because they weren't planning on bringing
Xbox. Yeah, it didn't initially. It did when they ported.
Well, when
they
brought it to the Xbox, but when Torchlight 2 came out,
doesn't.
Well, because they never planned to bring that to console.
I think that should be. I don't understand why these games don't support it. I think that should be...
Because I've gotten really comfortable with playing my PC games on my TV through...
Big picture mode. Yeah. Right. And I think those dungeon crawl games work great like that. I mean, I get very fatigued clicking and holding down to move and all that
stuff. Well, that's a first world problem.
Well,
is this why you went to Hawaii and sat on a beach?
I needed to rest my hand.
Clicky finger
was
getting tired.
I went to Carpal Tunnel Island. But
I don't know.
Honestly,
I guess maybe because I'm old school, but... Outside of the Snowblind games, the Norrath and Champions and all that stuff, I've always preferred a mouse interface for
Did you play games. Torchlight with the controller? Because it works great.
It was great, yeah.
I thought you finished that.
I did play Torchlight on both platforms. I played it on PC with mouse and keyboard, and I played it on 360 with
and they're
you're
doing,
right. They had good. You're right.
Diablo's coming to PS4, so
and PS3,
and PS3, and those.
You can do it.
I think it would work great. Why wouldn't it? You move your dude around a world with a stick.
Because
he's got four attacks.
I really like the ability to put my left pinky on shift and anchor my, because I like to play ranged characters a lot, and anchor myself and then pick who I want to shoot at with my mouse.
Or you could just move your guy to where he wants to stand and hold a trigger to shoot. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
I'm just saying, I'm not dense. I don't dislike the mouse and keyboard. I don't think that you're giving up anything to play it with a controller. I think it's easier.
All right.
Jeff Cannata hates mouse and keyboard and America.
Also America. I also
Why do you hate America so
Well,
much?
It's because there's so many mouse and keyboards in it.
It's disgraceful, isn't it?
So what are you going to play next? Next? Yeah. I have Remember Me for this weekend, and I'm very, very worried.
You'd be very worried.
Ooh. I'm very worried.
Ruh-roh. Really?
I edited, Ludwig did a video preview of that, which it does not look good.
Yeah, it's like, it's so weird because it seemed to like scream, it's another one of the video is like screaming potential and then This is the problem with being drawn in by videos. It's like a constant E3 drip of you know, the promise and then the reality of the year.
So what's interesting about Fuse and that is that when you talk to people about it, the feedback is very often, I'm sort of interested, I'll maybe buy it used. Mm. And it gets you thinking, like, how is it just all over for games of that caliber moving forward? And like, are we entering into that kind of weird no man's land that the movie industry went through, where it was sort of, I mean, it's kind of there now as well, right? Where it's blockbusters and indies and anything. I mean, like, it used to be that B had gone away, but now it's like anything that's not massive or tiny has gone away.
Yeah. I mean, and it's sort of created the golden age of television in that space, where those things that used to be in the 70s were like fucking amazing movies are now, you know, Breaking Bad, the television show. That guy would have written a movie in the 70s. But
it was interesting. I went to a party over the weekend, and they were, when I got there, people were setting up and they were playing Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers on television. Mm-hmm. And just looking, I mean, that movie's, how old is that now? Maybe like 10 years old now?
Yeah.
Watching that and then going back, and me and my girlfriend were watching Game of Thrones season 2, just the production values of that TV series versus Lord of the Rings, it's night and day. I mean, the show looks amazing.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, the show doesn't rely on so many CGI effects for all shots like Lord of the Rings does.
Right.
But I mean, it's a huge difference.
I mean, maybe it's Pollyanna of me to think this, but there's a possibility that this idea of, you know, direct sale to the user and cutting out, you know, the sort of game, I always mess up GameSpot and GameStop. GameStop, you know, their used game cash flow, maybe that savings gets passed on to the consumer. I can hope that that all of a sudden these games are, it is like Steam, where you are getting a $15 Van Helsing game. Like, that is such a high quality product for $15.
I think that's where the magic's going to be, right? It's going to be on that platform. I think what we lose in the console space potentially, I think we make up for.
But like, think who are there's guys? A chance.
So we don't know this developer. It's like, here's this developer, NeoCore. So we don't know anything about them. But I think the differentiation point is like they weren't building Van Helsing with a massive team and a massive budget. And so they set out to make a great game to fit into the space that they fit into, and they succeeded at it wildly. Whereas Insomniac came at Fuse with the, you know, hey, we're making this big AAA game. It's going to have a big
huge
team
AAA
on it.
Partner.
Yeah.
Do you not think that there's a chance that consoles can follow that model, that Steam model, and allow for, you know, these kind of
experiences? I don't right now, and I'll tell you why. Here's why. Because they've already stratified their market space in a different way, and they've already set the expectation for what a $15 game is in a different way. And they've set that as it's the Xbox Live Arcade or the PlayStation Network downloadable title.
Xbox
and downloadable
Live Arcade games have gotten more robust and interesting.
They have, but I think that they have sort of set themselves up to have a two-aisle store. There's the aisle that is all of the downloadable digital content stuff, and then there's the aisle that is the blockbuster boxed game.
I think Sony is going to be more transparent in the short term on how they're chasing that space. That seems to be the... We can get onto that when we get to the predictions.
I mean, maybe I'm a little negative, but I think it would be great. It would be great if we could see some of that being torn down.
Let me just give you this, again, perhaps Pollyanna, but is a potential road that leads there, where you get, okay, so the idea is the first time you turn on your television, Xbox One is what you see. And that real estate we've already seen Microsoft use for ads and aggressive marketing of things. I mean, how much of a stretch is it to think that it could be like Steam, where you load up and the first thing you see is Crazy Madness Week, where, you know, Forza's $15 for a week?
Yeah, I think the argument that they're making with when people try to compare Steam to consoles and Steam has all these amazing sales is because Microsoft and Sony can't necessarily do that all the time, because they also have retailers and they have partnerships with distribution companies. They can't mark things down all the way that they would probably want to. That's why you usually have sales for on the Xbox Live that are DLC for the third game in a 5-game series. You know, it's always this really shitty stuff. Whereas Steam just, you know, they're working directly with the publisher or the distributor, and they are a platform where that's the only way you can get it. So they're able to mark things down.
I think there's something that's got to come, and you guys talked about it a couple of weeks ago about the role of publishers, and I kind of took issue a little bit with your take on that because they're becoming irrelevant, and I think that's got to, that has to play through before the perfect consumer situation happens. In that, like, EA was stupid to sign Fuse; they just shouldn't have done it. And in some, I mean, that whole deal was a clusterfuck, clearly. And then EA walked away from it.
Yeah.
That whole situation around that game should never have happened. But what it's indicative of is how the whole market is moving into a point where little studios thinking they really need a publisher to get their game out into the market, that's going away.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the problem that Microsoft is going to have because they still have that mandate. In order to publish on Xbox Live, you need a publisher.
Yeah.
You need to have a major publisher backing you, whereas Sony, it's an open platform. They'll work with indies, and that's the push they're making. There are going to be so many indie games that for Sony, exclusive indie games, because they don't require a publisher at E3 for the PS4, and Microsoft is still scrambling to even announce any of that stuff. I mean, all of their games are these big AAA games, and the industry is changing so much. It is sort of that comparison between big blockbuster game, a movie, and little indie movie. I mean, that's where there is no middle market in the video game industry anymore, and unless it depending on the console platform specifically. And it's a lot of indie games and a lot of really great ideas and a lot of, you know, fantastic developers and these big AAA publishers. And I think Microsoft is still, I don't know what it is, but they do not want to work with indies the way that Sony obviously wants to in this generation.
Well, I mean, I think there's probably a nervousness about, like, how do we sell a brand new console that isn't serviced by big AAA blockbuster exclusive content?
But I think the sticking to games in boxes is partly paranoia about how you sell the box itself. Yeah. Because
it's got to go in a store.
It's got to go in a store. And if you say we're going exclusively digital, what motivation does GameStop or any big retailer outside of Amazon have to carry your box if they can't make money, you know, if they can't do the razor blades, right? They don't want to sell the razor. Right. And
I think that's part of the reason why that PC sort of got pushed out of the market, because it started losing so much shelf space, because consoles became so much bigger in the last generation that GameStop and other major retailers started shrinking that section more and more and more, and it was forced to go digital. Maybe that's why we've accepted this.
Well, there's a whole lot of factors with that. I mean,
sure. That's one aspect. That's a possibility, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's regroup ourselves for the second half of the show. We will get ourselves square. You guys can take a quick break if you're listening, and we can confirm we'll be back for the second half. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
You know, a couple of years ago, the disruption discussion was all about how much impact is iTunes or iPhone and iOS games going to have. And we were all, I think there was a lot of us who thought, well, you know, we'll go to E3 and there will be iOS games there and they'll be wowing us.
It was deeper than that, though, the disruption. I mean, half of what we've talked about today has been because of iTunes, like expectations on distribution, on pricing, on
availability. Oh, I see what you're saying. It's
not the games. It's the fundamental, like, how everything is pieced together.
Yeah. It's the whole ecosystem in the world, and it really has changed conversations dramatically.
And I think Microsoft and Sony are looking at that and go, we want that so bad.
You're going to see at E3 this year, major companies are going to be showing major IPs on mobile. Which is something that, you know, sort of happened a little bit already, but this year is going to be bigger than ever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're definitely seeing a move in iOS games finally to like counteract all of the social gaming. Everyone's like trying to like figure out who this mid-core gamer is, but there's some core games like Warhammer,
yeah, and Knights of the Old Republic iPad this week.
Yeah, Knights of the
and $10 is a port of the Mac version, but scaled down to the screen, it looks pretty good.
Well, and right before we came over here, I had to get Phoenix Wright, which I'm really excited to play, because for whatever reason I never played the Phoenix Wright games on DS, and then once
I played the first one, but not the others.
And I've been told several times that they're just going to be like, I'm going to love them, that they're going to be right up my alley. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
But yeah, I think the guys over at Rodeo did a really good job with Warhammer. Now they
it's really nice. I mean, if you've played Hunters and Hunters 2.
Hunters.
So one and two.
They've done two games already, which are turn-based
combat. Top-down, grid-based.
Yeah.
So it's quite old school fundamentally, but and clearly had their roots in the... Was Games Workshop a thing in the States? Like, yeah. I grew up with it, and Warhammer was like...
Yeah.
The sort of gateway
Games
drug
Workshop
into...
Games Workshop was definitely a thing here.
So Quest is more it's a sort of traditional dungeon crawler approach. There was the tabletop version of it, and they've taken the Hunter's engine, which is, you know, a team-based, turn-based grid thing. But it looks really good. I mean, it's pure 2D top-down. There's no pretense at 3D. It's sprites on a grid.
Cool.
It's hard. Like, it's brutal hard. Like, I was playing it on the plane on the way down here, and I was like the second or third mission, it kicked my ass.
Really?
Oh my God.
Interesting.
And you've got to play the character classes exactly the way it wants you to. You've got to pay attention when you're in the towns between missions. You've got to make sure that you're buying the stuff that you need to take in, and you've got to pay attention when the guy that's doling out the mission is telling you, because there's hints in the description. It's kind of...
You actually have to play the game.
It's like nicely old school, and that it's taken what made the tabletop great and has applied it directly to the video game version of it, and requires the same amount of attention. You can't just go, oh, I'm just going to wade in and I'm just going to like bang on the screen and I'll just, you know, I'll turn-based my way through it. There's like...
Nope.
If you plow into a situation and you don't have your warriors at the front... And because of the way it's structured as well, you can choke yourself in a corridor by ordering the guys that you send into a room in the wrong order. You know, kind of the way that you would when you were playing tabletop, where it's like, you put the wrong guy at the front, you can't move your warrior past your archer at that point if he's getting attacked, and like you'll just get destroyed. And in that way, I kind of really appreciated the purity of it, which I thought was, you know, they did a really good job with it.
Well, I mean, they had the core game system from Hunters, and that really lent itself to this, because all the things you're talking about, they highlight that really thoughtful tactical play where you're thinking about movement ranges, line of sight, action points, and all of those sorts of pieces that you have to balance. And that's the fun of it, right? The fun of it is balancing your head. Okay, I've got this guy who has, you know, this sort of armor on him, so he's weighted down this amount, which means he can move this far.
Yep.
And then I've got this other person who's lighter and can move further, but I don't want to get him up in front, but I want to make sure that I've like advanced far enough that I have line of sight so I can identify what's going on in this room. And it rewards you playing in a thoughtful manner, and that's really the key catch.
It's as gory as Hunters, which is kind of unusual on iOS in something being kind of brutally gory.
Well, they took a big step forward, I think, in the embellishment part of it, in the storytelling. Like, it wasn't just that they got Warhammer, it's that they also got inspired by Warhammer, obviously, to move forward. Right, Hunters was cool, but Hunters was this sort of, you know, here's these mercenary guys, and then in Hunters 2, they added a storyline to it, but it still it wasn't clicking as much as here, where, you know, you get the cool intro, and then you get the intro is the tutorial, and at the end of the tutorial, it drops you into the game, and suddenly now you feel like you're telling your story, but it is a story that they want to tell, and it's pretty well done.
I'd forgotten how rooted in the 80s the Warhammer lore still was, and just the names of things, like things that are the, you know, the boys with a Z, and, you know, the snotlings and things. There's a definite kind of old school, like, you can tell when it was when the narrative and everything was created from the names of stuff. But it's great. It's only $5 and it's a big game. There's some DLC. There's like, you get four character classes with the $5 download, and then there are some hybrid character types that you can download with IAP, and I think there's some extra missions. But they say, like, I think all in, there's like 25 hours worth of stuff in it. If you play it through and beat every mission first time. So
yeah, it's one of the games that's also trying that new hybrid pricing model of here, pay for the game and we'll give you a bunch of the game, but we'll give you more with an app purchase, which starts to mirror like the whole like $60 game plus DLC packs.
Yeah.
I don't know how successful that's going to be. That's a tough proposition. But I think the difference for like this game is that it has the built-in appeal it's a Warhammer person's game. I mean, if you're a Warhammer fan, you're going to get the game.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you probably look past it. And
it's up the ante for the 40K game that's coming as well, which needs to be good. So,
which needs to be good?
Yeah. Well, I think now, particularly now, I think 40K has more fans sort of worldwide than the original Warhammer did. There's, you know, I think there's some interesting things that they can do there. And also to educate a lot of people on sort of the roots of that kind of space marine archetype and look and feel that, you know, StarCraft pretty much lifted.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. And orcs.
Yeah.
And we saw some good news from early preview versions of XCOM coming to iPad. It looks like it's going to be, you know, faithful.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Except for the multiplayer, which is coming after launch.
Yeah.
But, you know, just having the single player faithful and not stripped down, but actually, you know, exactly like as awesome and as you imagined it, that sounds very, very promising.
Yeah. So something else I've been playing that is sort of from this sort of part of the market is I've been playing Anomaly 2.
Oh, really?
Did you play Anomaly?
I did play Anomaly, but I wasn't inspired to play another round of it.
If you're not familiar, it's reverse tower defense. So tower offense, I guess.
You play the crawlers.
Yeah, so you're the crawlers against the fiction of the game of the, so there was Anomaly and then Anomaly Korea, which was sort of a side story thing, which was, and they were set in the near future when the aliens had landed and they destroyed everything, and you were in the original, you were kind of moving troops and kind of building an army sort of to take on the aliens and push them back. In the sequel, it's like much further in the future and the aliens have completely kind of annihilated everything. And now it's really sort of piecing everything together. But before, what you had was there were two views. There was like a wireframe tactical view, which is where you would pause the game and you would choose where the route that your crawlers were going to take. And then you would like unfreeze it and they would do it. And then you would have to manage if there were drops in the environment because you could plop down from sort of an eye in the sky, you could say, okay, I'm going to drop a health pack in front of you, and it would create an area effect, and when they pass through it, it would up their health. And there were other boosts and things that you could do like that. In the sequel, instead of you being that eye in the sky, you're now a commander on the ground who has the same functionality, and he has to move within the world to be able to affect the thing. So while the tanks or the rocket launchers or whatever vehicles you have moving through the world are moving through, he's also going through and he's clearing a path and he's dropping things in the environment.
And you have control over him?
You have complete control over
him. So it's like
him.
Tiki Man from Pixel Junk Monsters.
Yeah, or it's like a commander from Command & Conquer where, you know, you're like a very powerful character that can affect the environment and affect the stuff. So he is now the guy that calls in additional stuff if things are available. And he can apply boosts to weapons and health packs, but he has to go collect them and then drop them in the right place.
Okay,
which makes you feel like you're a little more, you were a little detached previous. And if you knew the roots in the previous one, you could sort of just let it go and you were watching.
My problem with Anomaly was exactly that. It was a lot of like fire and forget feeling to it. Like,
and it was satisfying and it looked good, but it was quite passive.
I wasn't inspired to play more of it. I played some. I was like, okay, I played it. It was fun, but like it didn't do it for me.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot more to the sequel. It's
interesting.
It's PC and Mac right now on Steam. I think that all the other versions will come. Like, I mean, they did nearly everything eventually, didn't they?
The kitchen sink.
Yeah.
I think you could play it on your toaster or your refrigerator.
If it had a cell processor.
Only if it has a cell.
If it had a cell processor. All right. What else have you guys been up to playing wise? We have more iOS stuff, but I mean, we drive people crazy with iOS stuff.
Yeah.
I played Splinter Cell Blacklist, Spies versus Mercs.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's so... No, it's
not
it's
half
it's
as jealous really... as Dan Shu must be.
And it has all of the old Spies versus Mercs missions in it as well, right? As well as the new stuff. It's like a greatest hits of that mode.
Well, there's the classic mode, which is 2-on-2.
Yeah.
And then there's the new Blacklist mode, which is 4-on-4.
Right. But it has all the old maps, right?
That I don't know. Okay. I didn't... When they were showing it, they were showing brand new maps. But so I played the Blacklist mode. I didn't play the original mode. And it's very much a class-based experience now. The mercs who are in first person are no longer as clunky as they used to be. It's very smooth. It plays a lot more like Rainbow Six. I mean, they're a little bit easier to play around. But the thing that really works well in the game is that there's a balance between every single class. So the Predator, for example, on the stealth side can have an active camo suit turn invisible, yep. whereas the Mercs have a character who can send out an EMP blast and basically disable any of those, all that technology around them. And then there are guys that can actually drop landmines, and there's on the spy side, you can actually hack the landmines and explode, make them explode in front of people.
That's similar to, I mean, that's what Splinter Cell had. That's do you remember how much Shu was so hooked on that game?
I think I've seen people get more upset playing Spies vs. Mercs than any other multiplayer game outside of maybe Monopoly. Like
that's a weird comparison, but
no,
I
but
get
just
it.
Like
I get it.
Just like high, like
flip the board,
flip the board, throw the controller down, you fucking dick at the last minute, like literally. Like 2 seconds before the clocks run out, something like major happening that had clearly been getting sequenced up the entire duration of the level, and then everything just click into place and people just like throwing the controller down and storming out of it. Was like it was so well done, and like so few people seem to really get into it.
Yeah, I didn't really play. I played it a couple of times, but I feel like
the challenge level was high.
I feel like around that same time, it was either you're into that or you're into Rainbow Six, and I was a Rainbow Six guy.
But you had to work as a team. It was one of the few multiplayer games where you had to take voice chat seriously. Like, you had to be coordinating with each other and paying attention, and you had to have a headset on because
if I remember correctly, you could also hear people when they were chatting if you got close.
Right. So on the Merc side, they had detectors as well. But also, the other thing you could do is, as a spy, you could creep up on someone and you would get would you get style points if you said something when you killed people? There was an incentive to like whisper in people's ears and like
awesome.
And it was very cool because like
you're
like gotcha. Ah!
Well, the major difference between the classic mode and the Blacklist mode is that the classic mode had this sort of shadow effect where if you were a spy in the shadows, you basically become invisible in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In Blacklist, they don't do that's removed now. It's a little bit different. The actual way that the world reacts to so many people is slightly different, but the balance is expanded beyond like landmines in the original, because now there are things like AR drones where you can just throw a drone into the air and fly around and look for the hunters that they have.
Oh, God.
They have heat signature sensing. So if you're still, you don't give off as much heat in the suit. Whereas if you're moving, then it starts to pick up stuff in the world. So it's the game itself. When I played it, the thing that was funny is because it was a row of televisions, one next to the other. So we would be communicating with each other, but we had to whisper because you knew that everyone was on the other side hearing exactly what you were doing. And it still did work the same way as I remember, where you really did have to communicate. There are 3 points in the level that you have to hack these machines. One thing they've changed pretty drastically is before it was really impossible to actually grab a guy and knock him out. In this game, you can run up to someone and just hit a button and kill them or stun them. They've made that a lot easier. So it's basically a one-hit kill for the spies. That was the lethality between the two is very different versus the original. So I think it's great, though.
So if there was ever a game that I think is in the next generation and like long-term predictions that we're never going to see distributed like this, it's Splinter Cell. Like, I think they're throwing everything they can think of onto this disc and charging $60 for it. And I guarantee there's hundreds and hundreds of people working on this thing. It's phenomenally expensive, and it will not make its money back. Mm. Guarantee it. Because there's just not enough Splinter Cell fans. But in the long-term future, a game like this, I think, will be distributed in pieces. And you'll buy Spies vs. Mercs, or you'll buy Campaign Mode, or you'll buy they'll a la carte mode, because I would pay a decent amount of money just for Spies vs. Mercs. And right now, there's not confidence in the audience that they could do that. I think they feel like they've got to throw it. It's like we've got to put multiplayer in Tomb Raider because, you know?
If this generation wasn't about to end, I think you'd see the same thing with Treyarch and Black Ops 2, because that was another game that they jammed 3 separate huge modes into one disc that you knew that zombies would be expanded into its own thing eventually.
Yeah.
I think now, because it's the next generation, they have to sort of restart. But yeah, this game I think is going to be pretty fantastic.
Everyone I know that plays Call of Duty has not touched the campaign in Black Ops 2.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And I think there's an opportunity. And I think that's how the sort of financial health of these big budget products is going to eventually be fixed is that you will buy multiplayer Black Ops 2, and because if that's what you want, that's what you do, and that might be $60.
Yay.
You know, or it might be $10 a month, or it might be. But I think the whole what
so
the
does
big
campaign go away? Or does
no,
campaign
no.
Become
I think
an episodic
I think
thing?
I think it comes either episodically or it comes in a different way. But I think outside of the obvious next gen stuff, I think there's a next generation of how we buy things and play things and things that are presented to us. I mentioned earlier on that the idea of a disc is to satisfy retail, and I think that's literally all it is right now. And I think the conceit of it all having to be bundled on a disc and now on a Blu-ray, I think, you know, they're not going to be – there's going to be so many companies go out of business if they keep trying to shove everything like Blacklist out the way they're doing it, because they're never going to make their money back. Fuse is never going to make its money back. You know, how many people are going to buy that? It's not going to crack a million sales, right?
You're seeing a lot of this change with Sony – because, I mean, they're trying to they split off the multiplayer in Uncharted 3 as a free-to-play product. Mm-hmm. They released the separate pieces of Starhawk, I think was one of the games. Warhawk was one of the games that was just exclusively – or it was exclusively digital, but it also came out to retail for a little while as well.
When they did that, didn't it come with a headset?
Yes, that was the incentive.
That was the incentive,
that
right?
That was the incentive to purchase it. So, I mean, that's basically what we're going to get into. And, you know, a company that is going to be interesting to watch is CCP with Dust514, because they've put a lot of effort into making that game a lot better than it showed off the first time. The first couple of previews of that game were didn't play very well. It didn't look very well. It was kind of a mess.
Since then,
it's actually gotten a lot more stable. It's a lot better. The sort of explosion of information that comes with a game that's based on the Eve franchise, that sort of has sort of been not dumbed down, but it's been sort of boxed in a lot cleaner packages. It makes it a lot easier to get into it. And I think, the Blacklist is going to be interesting because they had to succeed with this because Conviction didn't do, I don't think, as well as they wanted it to do. Also, it was exclusive to that platform, and then it eventually came out on PC. And then also, it is a brand new game from it's the first game from Ubisoft Toronto, which they've put a lot of money into. Yep. I mean, this is their showpiece for that
and
studio.
No Michael Ironside.
No Michael Ironside.
His voice is changing.
So
it's very sad.
Speaking of CCP and also in that arena, what do you think was going to happen, or what do you think will happen with Wargaming.net's console announcement at 360? Because
they've not said what it is, though, right?
No, they have not said what it is. But thinking about Wargaming,
tanks, right, or something tanky?
Maybe not.
Tankster.
They've acquired studios. They've got.
Do you think Chris's game is exclusive? Is console?
I don't think it's console, but I think they did acquire a console developer as well.
Yeah.
I mean, my point is not what the content is at this point, because we were talking about strategy.
Oh, how they're going to put it out?
How will they put it out? I don't see Wargaming.net, who has had all of this, you know, amazing success building free-to-play.
Yeah, and on the back of having basically, they used to be a shove-things-in-a-box company, and they took the bet on just leaving all that behind. I don't think they're going to suddenly go back to, oh, now we're back to discs again.
And I think they're the fearless type who will come in and say, yeah, we'll make what we'll plainly say is going to be a AAA caliber game, and we're going to do it in a way that's not common. Maybe it won't be even in a box.
Yeah.
Who knows how they'll do it? But I think that they are unconventional and have had such success being unconventional. The last thing they would do is say, oh, yeah, we hired these studios and we're just going to make $60 box games. I mean, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't make any sense for them to do that, right? So they could be the beginning of a change, right? Like, the change wouldn't come from EA and Ubisoft. It'll come from outside, where people have found other successes and bring that success into the arena of the console, right?
Yep.
I mean, we've been looking for it for a long time. Why hasn't it happened already?
I think fear. and I think as a business, the games industry doesn't trust its audience as much as it should. I think we've all demonstrated in other areas that we're perfectly capable of adapting to a new way of doing things. But I think there's a lot of clinging on to the way it used to be because they're scared of losing that what they think is the foundation of the audience that's still very traditional and wants something in a box and wants things a certain way. And I think if they just did, we're going to do it like this, I think.
I think that's part of the reasoning Microsoft is so adamant to stick with publishers for those indie games.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, you know, Sony's taking a different approach, which is this much smarter approach. And it's more open the way that Steam is.
Mm-hmm.
The incentive to be creative for these independent developers is because they want to make great games. And they need a platform to put those games on. Steam is the obvious choice, obviously, because, you know, they have green light and there are other avenues to get games on Steam. Sony is allowing them to do that. Microsoft's not. And I think it's because they still have this mentality of, you know, when you reduce the cost of distribution by not having to put a product on the shelf, it makes it a lot more attractive to offer it to people directly to the consumer. Yeah. You know, the PSN does that and PS4 is going to do that. Microsoft is still thinking in the old way where it's, you know, there are two sides of the industry and two different piles of money, and this pile seems bigger, so let's go for this one. I think the industry is changing so much. I mean, 10 years ago, we didn't talk about any, like a lot of the stuff we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
I'm definitely eager to start talking about E3 stuff, and okay. We haven't mentioned Nintendo at all. Yeah. Where does Nintendo...
One thing that struck me, actually, if Nintendo made the Xbox One, would all the games be called something One?
That would be cool.
Mario One!
Mario One!
Halo 1.
Halo 1.
Forza 1.
Yeah,
Mario Kart 1.
Well, I guess if Nintendo had made it. We looked at that different way. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Metroid 1.
So, joking aside, where does Nintendo fit into the future that you're describing for the gaming populace? And what do you think they're going to show at E3? How do you think they're going to fare?
Boy, it's so strange because, you know, they're not doing a press conference. They're doing this weird, like, come over and just play the stuff and people will be able to play at a
just
Best Buy.
Go to Best Buy.
Yeah, you don't need to go to E3. Just go to Best Buy.
Buy something while you're there, please.
Yeah, we have this system out you should be aware of.
Apparently Wii U sales actually jumped after the Xbox One announcement, but there was no figure given for what it jumped from. There was like some 384% like number thrown around, but it's like the week before, it might very well have been one. And they sold 384 the week after. I mean, like...
It's a hell of a jump, man. That's a great percentage jump right there. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't know what they can show that will, like, rock... That'll steal the thunder.
Why is everybody so quick to doubt Nintendo's ability to show great games?
No, I think they'll show great games. I just think that they're going to rock the world with what they're going to show. It's going to be... I mean, like, they have to play to the fan base, which is...
Which they've already established they're going to.
And show some Zelda-y stuff. Show some Mario-y stuff. And the
Smash Brothers?
And the, Smash Brothers, come on, which won't be out for 2 years.
But also, the purest Nintendo...
Nintendo's not making it, so I think it'll be out sooner than that.
Dude.
It's Namco's making it.
There's no goddamn way that game comes out this year.
It's not... No, oh, it's not coming out this year. We know that. But that's not 2 years. Like, next year would not be 2 years
end
away.
End of next year. 18 months, maybe. Maybe.
I think this year you're probably going to get, like, a Mario Kart thing. Didn't they announce that?
Already announced?
I mean, come on,
man.
They
already announced it.
How many times do we need to play Mario Kart?
I know.
You need to play it again. Isn't the only thing that, like, that Nintendo wants you to know. I don't know.
I hate being this cynical about it. I really want to get excited about something that Nintendo.
Well, what about
does
the generation of people who? I mean, there's always a new generation of people coming into games. There are people right now who like look,
but
they never bought
it. But they don't have the emotional attachment to Nintendo.
But that doesn't mean that Mario Kart's not an awesome game, and they won't build it. Mario Kart is a building block for that. Of course, they're going to make a Mario Kart. That's going to be awesome.
But it's like it's a fast pass through to the game that they want to play next, which is probably a Call of Duty or a Halo or something. And I think that the stuff that people are drawn to,
we can't have whimsical fun anymore.
Well,
where's the whimsy?
I want some whimsy. Bring it. Give me something to be like, you know, I would love, here's what I would love. I would love them to walk, you know, they're not going to walk out on stage because there's no stage and they're not walking on anything. I would love for them to, you know, invite us into their booth and say, here's the new Mario. Check this out. You've never seen Mario do this. Equivalent to the Galaxy game. Yeah, I would be freaking out. Unless, and it would be like, you're using the pad for something no one's ever used a pad for. It's incredible. Look at how additive this pad is to the experience. And I will be the first person to eat my words about Nintendo. I'll be like, yes.
I don't think the problem is the IP or the software. I just think it's the fact that the Wii U just never took... I think they've got a really hard sell because whatever they show doesn't just have to sell games. It has to sell systems. And that's their problem is that the foundation that they sort of took for granted when the original Wii just exploded.
Yep.
They don't have that luxury anymore.
No, not at all.
And
I think they were definitely hopeful that Wii U would establish a better beachhead before Xbox One and PS4 were announced, because now it is a comparison.
And it didn't. And they're sort of screwed, but they're still so... I mean, I just beat Luigi's Mansion, and like...
It's a great game.
One of my favorite games of the last year. It's so well made, and it's beautifully designed, and like, you know... You know, everyone's talked about it a lot, but I mean, it just shows that the attention to detail that Nintendo at their best pay is way beyond what a lot of other people do.
I just think we're inching in on 7 months since that system was released, and it's hard for me to say, like, this is the system seller game. Mm-hmm. I mean, a year after the Xbox 360 was released, they had Gears of War. That was a pretty big marquee title. What is the big 1 year later marquee title for the Wii U?
I thought it was going to be Lego City, and it wasn't.
Which is sort of disappointing.
Oh, that was disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit disappointing. But I think that it's just, I think it's a little, what maybe like, I'm trying to look for the right word. I think that we're all a little bit too quick to jump on the abandoning Nintendo line when we all love games and we've all loved experiences that we've had playing Nintendo games. And I don't know why we're just so quick to think that that's not going to happen and continue to happen.
Because they've not shown anything to make us want to buy. I don't have a Wii U yet.
But they haven't shown either. I agree. The Wii U story hasn't been told well. There isn't a story to tell. Like, so far, they haven't... Like, Zombie U was the best game, and it was just not... That's just not a Nintendo game.
New Super Mario Bros. Was a great game.
Yes,
I played it. But it's...
It was one game.
This is the same thing. Here's the problem.
But wait, Call of Duty does the same thing year in and year out, and people are all over that. Just doing the same. You might not be, but I'm saying like that hasn't hurt its consumer base any.
No.
Well, okay, but look at the response to the Microsoft press conference that we just saw that only had Call of Duty in it.
Depends on who you're asking. There were a lot of folks who turned around and said, actually, what they did was really smart because they showed the most powerful things in the world. They showed NFL football. They showed Call of Duty, the biggest selling game franchise in the world right now.
I want Nintendo to, you know, it feels like a three-pronged pedestal that they're on. And I want them to add
some... What are
the
three prongs?
Zelda, Mario, and Metroid.
Oh, okay.
You know, and maybe Donkey Kong. I don't know. There's very few tent poles holding up their tent, and I want them to add more of them.
I do too. I don't disagree, but what I'm saying is they're not having a press conference because they want you to come play games. I actually think that I kind of like the idea of saying, hey, come play games. This is E3. We don't have a console, but we have games, and I'm hopeful. Yeah. And maybe it's blindly optimistic, but I'm hopeful that they will have some really great showings of their big properties that we know that they're going to have, and a couple of things that we didn't know about yet, so they can say, hey, yeah, it's E3, and by the way, we've got this and this coming too. Maybe it's a Retro Studios game.
The way they'll impress us as well is by saying, and it's out 6 weeks from now, or it's out, you know, in November.
You've never heard of this, and you'll be able to buy it in November.
And I think one of the biggest mistakes they made was they put the Wii U out and then didn't release anything for it.
Right.
Because there's just the arrogance of that.
And they had the
shocking.
Same problem with 3DS, but yet now you look at people, like, I'm watching on Twitter where my friends are starting to play Animal Crossing, and it's like, they still have that ability to craft those experiences that people have really personal relationships with.
I didn't buy a 3DS when it came out, I just bought a 3DS XL, and how old's the 3DS now? Like, 3, 4?
Not that many years old?
I think it's maybe 3 years old.
3 years old, probably.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I mean, it was because everyone, I knew a bunch of people that were raving about Luigi, and that was what finally pushed me up. So they can still do it, and I think Nintendo is uniquely positioned because of who they are and what they are, that they can ride things out a lot longer than...
That's all I wanted to say is, like, they can still do it. Like,
don't, I
like,
hope they do.
Like,
I
abandoning
hope,
hope in Nintendo is I just feel like it's premature.
I'm actually more excited about them than I am with Microsoft and Sony, because Microsoft and Sony kind of showed their hand. So we know what we're going to get is brand new IP that looks amazing with all these services. Nintendo is the one that really needs to fight the hardest, because they're going to be trying to get out of that cloud of discussion for the next generation.
Well, there's so infinite power in the cloud.
I'm really excited about what they're going to show off. And you know what? Maybe that is they have that tentpole mentality of these specific franchises, but they're still great franchises. And I still love Metroid. If they announced a new 2D Metroid for 3DS, I'd buy that shit on day one. Like, they haven't had one of those since Fusion years ago, you know,
would not be alone.
You know what I mean? Like that, I think, you know, I'm excited about what they're going to show off, and I think that they have a lot to prove, because what ended up happening is they made this powerful system that could handle HD games, powerful for the, considered for this generation, hoping that that would entice, because they thought that they'd have the same audience with the Wii and people would buy them like crazy. Right. And then they'd have incentive for the third party to come in and make great games for it. And third party did come in to make some pretty good games for it and didn't sell anything. Activision didn't announce Ghosts for the Wii U. There was Black Ops 2 for the Wii U. Pretty good version of it. Looks great. But no one bought the thing because the system didn't sell very well. So there's not a lot of incentive for those third party companies to make games for that console when no one owns the thing. So now it's up to Nintendo to release their games to get people to want to buy that system to entice third parties to go into it.
All right, stick around. When we come back on the other side, we will hop into that heated debate with Xbox One and PS4 as we come up to E3 2013, only a couple of weeks away. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. In heavy rotation on my current playlist. It's a pretty awesome track. All right, now into E3, the big boys come to collide. Colossal stakes in the works.
Colossal stakes?
Yes. I don't know.
Sounds T-bones?
Good. Yes, only if you go to the Palm. I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of grandstand pundits.
This is going to be the biggest chest puffery E3 of all time. It's filled
with tremendous bullshit.
Basically a one-on-one, right? Because Nintendo have been like, fuck this, you guys just get on with it.
Yeah, we're looking at a small screen over here. Yeah. In our hand.
And we're just going to have our like nice games over here that people were going to want to, you know.
All right, so you guys have a preference. We talked a bunch about Xbox One. Let's talk about PlayStation 4 first.
All right.
So there's a lot of cool things, I think, in the run-up that have happened.
How do you want to do it? You want to do predictions or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be black and it's going to glow blue.
did any of you guys see?
And it's going to have silver bits on it.
Boxy looking.
Yeah, kind of boxy looking.
Since Spider-Man's kind of done, which movie do you think they'll pull a font from?
After Earth.
That'll be the new font. That'll be the PlayStation.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Gary Whitta wrote that.
Yeah, he did with M. Night, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Good on you, Gary.
After Earth has a distinctive logo treatment. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
I kind of...
All right, so there's some cool stuff coming out. And one of the most important things, or one of the most interesting things to me recently, was the story that we had on the Shack, and I think lots of people have covered this, that the developers are really going to be pushed to include Vita support.
Apparently it's a requirement,
right? The games, but I mean, pushed to, like,
that's
really
cool.
Awesome. The Vita has really struggled. They made no bones about it.
I have a real soft spot for it, though.
Yeah.
Really? What's your spot? Just based on what?
Just I don't know. I just want it to work. I don't know.
I've had a blast playing Guacamelee on it. That's the last thing I played on it.
I've been playing Gravity Rush, and then I was whatever they call it, cross playing Sly Cooper.
And really, that's where this thing could come into its own. So obviously, you know, with some of the language they've used, I think the big thing about Sony's approach to the PlayStation that I've seen that I like, that I hope is where they're going with it, is this idea of like, and there might be. There might be motivations of, hey, Vita didn't do well just on the games alone, so let's see if we can wrap it up into the PlayStation 4 bundle. But I like the idea of wrapping it up into that. I like the idea of being able to use my Vita as a on-the-go, cool conduit to my PlayStation 4, wherever I am, anywhere. I liked it when they had that idea as a PlayStation 3 thing. Mm-hmm. If they can pull it off on the PlayStation 4, which I think will be a significant thing.
So starting with that then, do you think they'll do a new SKU of Vita and Vita, no more Wi-Fi only version of Vita, that it's going to have there's going to be an always connected Vita version? Because I think the speculation was it was going to go the other way, right? That they were going to kill the 3G version, or they did kill the
3G.
They did kill the 3G.
Right? Do you think they're going to swing the other way and be like, okay, because for the Vita PS4 ecosystem to work properly, your Vita needs to be online all the time. And with a device that is mobile, you are inherently mobile with it.
Right.
So if it's not in a Wi-Fi zone, it's useless. So I would say there'll be a new, not necessarily cheaper Vita, but cheaper in that they go 4G or something and partner with some with AT&T probably, and there'll be a you can be connected all the time with this special data plan version of Vita. And if you and let's throw in, if you sign up for 2 years, it's even cheaper.
It's unfortunate they're not really in a corporate...
They'll sell it like a phone, I'm basically saying.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they were in a corporate financial position to where a price change and a new SKU of the Vita was a viable option for them, to where they could actually...
But I don't think that's what they're going to hang the business... But I think they're going to say, for you to be convinced that we are all in on this...
Yes.
This is what the Vita is now as part of our ecosystem, and you need to be online.
I don't know that they have to go to 4G to do that, though, because there are a number of iOS games that have to be connected, have to have a constant state of connectivity to work, and yet there's still people playing them on iPod touches and people playing them on iPad. I mean, my iPad is Wi-Fi only, and I'm still...
Yeah, me too.
So it's not the end of the world. It just means that you couldn't be, you know, in some manners of conveyance and playing it at the same time. But right, Wi-Fi is getting more spread.
But
anyway.
If the requirement is remote play, there's a larger bandwidth, because the requirement isn't you've got to do a Vita version. It's you've got to do remote play.
Yes.
Yeah, but when you connect a device to remote play on PS3 now, it needs to be in the same Wi-Fi network for it to actually communicate.
Okay.
So it's not. And I think when they say that they want remote play to work with the Vita, it's like
I'm just getting warmed up. First prediction.
You also have your Vita.
I haven't done this for a while.
Like you also have your Vita on your couch next to you, sort of what Microsoft does with Smart Glass. I think that's what they're trying to do. I think if they were really serious about wanting that ecosystem to work, what they really need to do is get people to have a Vita.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Do you think there'll be a bundle with a Vita in it?
That would be what I was kind of hoping they were going to do with the PS3 when they made the same claim with the Vita and the PS3. Yeah. I just want to know, is when I play a Gran Turismo, can I use it as a rearview mirror? Are they ever going to put that feature
You're predicting a television mount for your Vita?
Oh, God.
Well, that was one of the things they showed for the PS3 and the PSP.
We need another thing on the pile by our TV.
Yeah, I saw your video. That
it's going to come with a little stand that looks like an elbow for a rearview mirror. You stick it on top of your television. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, dear. So anyone want to take a stab at like what the industrial design of the box is going to look like? Does anyone care?
It's a box.
Boxy.
Yeah. It'll have edges.
I think
edges? You're going on a limb with edges?
Yeah. You know,
I don't think it's going to have any edges. It's just a sphere.
Edgeless
design.
It just is. It's cutting edgeless.
It lives only in the cloud.
You basically recreated the PS9 commercial from a decade ago.
It's cloud-shaped. I think they're going to go a similar direction to Microsoft, and it's going to be quite a functional looking
monolithic. Just big box.
Now I heard that there was some kernels of truth in that fake video, in that there were some surprisingly accurate details of what the hardware looked like in that fake one that came out a few weeks ago. So someone did a leaked E3 reveal video on YouTube, and it was very convincing. A glossy black thing with a white glowy line in the middle.
Here's the question.
Rounded rectangle.
Have we moved past the era of standing shit on its end?
Yes.
We're no more standing shit on its end.
And if Sony could stop ribbing things, that would be nice as well. Because the third...
Dear Sony, you are not Trojan. Do not rib the console.
The third gen PS3 is fucking ugly.
Oh, it's the worst.
So no more, we just, all that new cabinetry that you got that supports standing shit on its end.
No more standing shit on its end. No more stands for additional price.
You have to turn your
price stand
over so you can be able to fit it in properly.
Well, it did sort of feel a little bit like Microsoft just decided, well, you know what, fuck it, we've tried to please you with industrial design before, we're just going to make a black box.
But did you, the funny thing is, like, they cared so much about that, they wanted to make sure, that's where standing shit on its end came from.
Yeah, remember
like,
the whole,
how little space it'll
take
up,
remember,
it's an inhale.
Remember
it's
when Jay Allard was on stage talking about how, like, the design, or they showed that video, the design is like inhaling and exhaling.
Yes!
Now they're just plastic.
To be fair, did you hear the bullshit about this one? Like, there was a line on why it looked the way it did. The rectangles on the front, the two tone rectangles,
reflect the Metro design.
No. They're exactly 16:9 ratio rectangles, so that it doesn't clash with your television.
Oh, thank God! Finally, I am.
I've been so embarrassed every time people came over to my house because my equipment
clashed.
I'm
really sorry that the console isn't the same aspect ratio as the television.
The only time I ever look at my console is when I go to turn them on. With being able to just press a button on my controller,
you don't
I
need
barely
to be able
look
to
at the fucking
it.
Thing.
You just fucking yell at
Xbox
it.
On, and you are still 16:9, right?
I've had so many instances.
Sony's gonna come up with some golden ratio shit. All right, yeah. They're gonna be like, ours is better. It's more pleasing to the eye.
What's up with that strange square that clashes with that weird rectangle?
So I think a very functional, glossy, black, rounded corner rectangle with
a slot for a disc.
Yeah, and back to slot loading. None of this like awful, ugly, trays. Nasty tray.
No more top loader.
Right. No, the thing that got what the
top loader that they have on the new PS3s. Oh man.
Yeah, not a win. Not a win. Okay, so games. What do you think about games?
No, let's do price first.
Oh, to price.
Do you think they even announce price?
No.
Yes.
I don't think so.
You think they'll announce
absolutely.
A price?
Sony are going to go, fuck you, Microsoft, on everything, and they're going to go balls out.
Well, Sony's last this year, right?
Okay.
Yeah. $399, one SKU.
So I would say that Microsoft wouldn't.
I think $399 is. Both of them are coming.
Since Microsoft is first this year, I don't think they're going to announce price. But if Sony's last, they'll probably announce price, and Microsoft will go later.
Yeah.
And then I think the release date for it will be tied basically to their big marquee title, which would be Battlefield 4 for PS4 because it has content.
Which already
October,
has a date, right?
October 29th.
Yeah.
And for the PS4, October 29th, and for the Xbox 360, November 5th, which is Ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, both those dates make a lot of sense because it means you get your first shipment in, you sell out all the pre-orders, you get time to restock before Thanksgiving.
Friday. Yeah.
Right.
You're playing games, you're in your costume for Halloween. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
I think the controllers are going to be expensive.
Oh, definitely. Although the Sony controller could conceivably be really expensive because it looks like a fancy
piece. I think a second, whatever they're calling it, is like $70.
Share buttons don't make themselves, dude.
And touch
well,
touchy
the thing
panels
that,
and
that I like about the PS4 controller too is that the touchpad is another button as well.
Yeah,
which it's actually a really functional controller.
Yeah.
So you're touching and pressing.
Yeah.
I think you make a good argument about them announcing price.
I think Sony are going to be like, we're not dicking around this time. We're not going to hide anything from you. This is what it looks like. This is what it can do. It's this much. We're going to give you six months. Are they going to do the, you know, buy a new car, get Sirius XM for 3-6 months or whatever, and you're going to get PS Plus with it.
Right.
So when you take it out of the box, everything it can do, it does for a while.
That makes a lot of sense, of course.
I don't think Microsoft is announcing price.
I don't know about this $400 price. I mean, this is a...
They're not going to make the mistake.
Yeah, they're not going to do that twice, dude.
No.
You say that with such confidence.
They won't.
$100 is the top tier.
There's no way. If there's one thing you can tell with Sony right now, it's that they're looking back at all the mistakes that they made with PS3, and they're also looking at all the things that they did right on PS3, and they're doubling down on those, like the indie support, and like that whole group that Nick and those guys are in, and like are in a great position right now within the Sony org, where they are the sort of arbiters of taste and sort of the mavens within Sony. They're empowering those guys, and they're going to go, okay, we fucked up on price, we fucked up on the box, we fucked up on multiple SKU. I think it's going to be one SKU, one price, PS Plus day one.
One SKU makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, really does.
Also, based on the processor is an x86 processor. They don't have to pay back the money for that R&D on the cell. Like, that's part
it's
of the reason why the PS3
RAM
was so fucking expensive.
Yeah, and
they got expensive RAM.
They have expensive RAM, and so far the yields on their processor runs have been rumored to not be that great. So, I mean, this is not an inexpensive box to make.
No. Here's what my dream scenario is for both of these guys as far as I want them to do the Apple and say, come to our website, pre-order it. It'll be at your house day it's released.
Yeah.
You don't have to stand in any fucking lines.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with that bullshit. You come to our website, you sign up, you buy it, pay for it, and on day one, it's there.
There's a lot of press behind those big-ass lines, though, in Times Square and
shit.
Which
didn't stop Apple from having big-ass lines.
Nah.
They have big-ass lines still, and people. But I don't have to deal with it if I choose not to. Right.
Well, they do. I mean, Microsoft does have a big store that they do sell content out of, and Sony does the same, and retailers will do that shit, too.
There's a Microsoft store opposite the Apple store near where I live, and it's never got anyone in it. And they are the most high-pressure. Like, I went in there once, And like, can I help you, sir? No, I'm good. I'm just looking.
Please take this surface.
And then somebody else, can I help you? And it was like after the fourth one, I'm like, just leave me alone.
Do you need help figuring out how Windows 8 works? Everybody seems to.
Just ask for directions to the Apple store.
By the way, total side note, has anybody had any experience with Windows 8?
Yeah, I have it on my PC.
It's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I spend as little time in it as humanly possible. And the lack of any kind of, like the fact that you have to hover your mouse in the bottom right hand corner to turn the damn thing off and it doesn't always register.
It is the one piece of software that made me feel like a supreme idiot. Like I've never felt so technologically unsavvy.
Because the assumptions they made about you were just wrong.
It's unbelievable that progressed as far as it did. Because, like, I grew up my whole life using computers. I feel like I can pretty much sit down to any operating system and figure it out. I mean, I fucking, use DOS.
And you're like, where did they hide that thing?
I don't know how to do anything on this. It's crazy. Anyway.
I hate change. I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm just messing with you. But let's talk about the games. So one thing that Sony did do was at their announcement was they showed games already in play, in-game action.
I had a question about the Kinect and the PlayStation Eye. Do we know? Are they definitely wired?
Yeah.
I think
the Kinect is wired. Because
it has to be, right?
Because the one doesn't turn on unless it's plugged into the Kinect. It doesn't work.
Is the Eye, is it Bluetooth or is it wired? Do we know?
It's got to be wired.
I hope it's not Bluetooth. I don't want to have to charge shit.
I'm just fed up of trailing wires all over the place.
Well,
you're going to lose all those wires on those old consoles when you throw them out the window.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can relate because I hear arguments about like how much spaghetti there is behind our internet.
Oh, yeah. No,
there's a lot of wires going to a lot of places.
I agree with that. But by the same token, like at least I don't have to charge the shit. Like it bugs me when I have to
All right. So they showed three games and they showed in-game. What do you think presentationally they will have on the stage? Will there be new games?
Last Guardian. Boom. Calling it. It's there.
You're insane.
It's there.
I heard about that on Twitter too.
Guaranteed.
No way.
I think they open the conference with PS4 Nathan.
Like Nathan, he walks out on stage.
I think they open with Uncharted PS4 and it'll be Nathan Drake introducing the
whole thing. It's convenient there's a 4 already in the title.
I think they'll close on it.
Really?
I think they'll close.
I think Sony's in a bucking trends thing, and I think they're front loading.
You don't think someone's looking, like you said, they all love Apple. I mean, everybody always loved the and one more thing.
Yeah, but they haven't done that for so long. And even before Steve died, he hadn't done it for ages. Like, it's this myth about Apple press conference. I went to 2 or 3 and he didn't do it.
Microsoft does
I was
that
very disappointed.
Microsoft did it with Final Fantasy. That was the last time
they did it with Halo 4. They always do it. That's Microsoft's. And then they walk off the stage.
I think Uncharted 4, how good does that game have to look to be impressive for a new console? Mm-hmm. Like, their bar is so high already. For Uncharted games, like how...
Well, we can have that discussion. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges both the Xbox One and the PS4 face is that the prior generation has already been a 1080p generation.
Yep.
And demonstrating a real, clear, compelling, wow, that looks, oh my God, amazing, more amazing than what I've been playing is going to be really tough.
I would love if whatever that last epic... The Unreal 4 demo thing. Not Samaritan, the second one. The dude with the dreads.
Yeah.
If that was a real game and that was exclusive to one or the other, that would be
that would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, if they're showing stuff that looks like that, yeah. That's pretty rad. But I mean...
I feel like Sony felt very confident showing the games that it did, the Killzone, that because they were already expected. I feel like they... wouldn't have done that if they didn't know that they had, more bullets in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
For
yeah, absolutely.
And that gets me like if you already showed those games and now you're coming into your press conference with
I completely agree. I think that people who are like, Killzone, it's because this was like the first tier.
Yeah, because you kind of knew
this is the first tier.
We've got better stuff than this.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. I feel I don't know why, but I have this feeling they're going to have something else. They're going to have more. They will have more games that come out in that presentation. They'll have, I'm going to guess they're going to have 3 unannounced big time PlayStation 4 games that will be on stage in their presentation.
Are they sequels or are they new IP?
New IP. I don't think they're going to trot out many familiar names. I don't think there's going to be, Jack and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank. You know, yeah. Like, you, it got to the point where there was such fatigue with those Sony conferences. It was like, here, we did another one.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be new stuff. I think, you know, I think they'll...
Who gets Metal Gear?
Who gets Metal Gear?
Oh.
Which stage?
Oh, That's a good question.
Sony. They'll show it at Sony.
That's kind of what I think. And, interesting. That could...
That could be a total mega
massive.
Megaton. Yeah,
that would be massive. And I mean, think about just like from the video you've already seen, like what that actually is one where you're like, holy shit, I've not seen anything like that.
Absolutely, and that could really, really put PS4.
And will it be the no explosions trailer that he shows? See his tweet.
Yeah,
he's tired of explosions in trailers. It's just going to be.
It's just going to be talking and smoking,
and maybe a puppy.
That may be less effective because that franchise has gone multi-platform now.
It's just going to be an interview with a guy in gauze.
I think part of the reason why...
No less effective than Call of Duty is for Xbox.
Well, I think that's why they got Call of Duty out of the way. Now, that was the big marquee thing.
It is
that,
so not out of the way. It's still going to be at a press conference.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's going to be at either one.
Hell, they
of
might even just show the same
In fact, I actually think that what because Bungie is going to be showing Destiny at PS4 in-game footage. And I think what Microsoft is going to do is show off Respawn's game.
Yeah,
during their conference.
That's the rumor.
And you can't have Respawn and Infinity Ward on the same stage. And I don't think that that's...
Really? Are they that?
You would be awesome.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some sort of slap fight that happens.
Yeah, they're going to merge and make a fighting game between Bobby Kotick and Jason West. And So, I don't know. Yeah, I think that Respawn's game is going to be shown off. It is going to be shown off at E3. And I think it's going to be during Microsoft's conference. And Bungie showing off their game during Sony's press conference. And Microsoft has, I know there's, well, here's the question that I have. Do you think that Sony, when they get on stage during the conference, they show any of the games they show during their reveal?
I think they
give
montage, but not, I don't think they dwell on them.
Yeah. What about current generation stuff? What happens to, so Microsoft, I don't think a lot of people notice it, but Microsoft said in one of, I think it was, might even have been Larry, he said that they have an exciting announcement coming about 360.
Price I think drop. It's going to be like $79.
Yeah, it's
got to
be a price drop.
Yeah.
I think they're dropping that thing down.
What other
bucks.
Exciting announcement can there be?
Well, there's no backward compatibility. And so are they going to...
It's a cheap box.
Are they going to encourage a idea of you buy a... You still might buy an Xbox 360 and put it in another room because there will be...
Sony did it.
It's an extender. Yeah.
Wasn't there a rumor that they were changing the form factor again, making it even cheaper?
And smaller was a rumor, yeah.
There was a rumor that I think it was going to be like at $99 or $79.
I bet that's kind of an awesome pathway to go down is the idea that it's not backwards compatible. It is... a continuation of the shit you already own. You have a 360 and the Xbox One will talk to it and utilize it in new ways. So there's no reason for you to throw it in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You can still play your old games on it and it'll also be a sling box for the other room or something.
I did see a funny tweet. Someone said, well, since there's the HDMI in port on the Xbox One, can I just plug in my 360?
Pass through the 360
and just have backwards compatibility that way.
And it'll give an overlay for commands.
Yeah.
And you know, on the other side of the fence, and Sony's going to be showing, and you know they'll be emphasizing Gran Turismo 6.
Yeah.
And that's PlayStation 3 for
let's
now.
Let's not spend too much time on it, though, please, Sony.
Well, they will.
I mean, it's just a boring demo.
It's polyphony. It's internal. It's Gran Turismo, and it's plays so well with Europe.
Other first party developers does Sony have that we haven't heard anything
Sony
from?
Santa Monica. The last thing they worked on was
God of War.
Ascension. Of War.
There could be a new God of War.
I don't know that they really want to go down
leave
that
it alone
road
for a bit.
The I last think they should one, have been alone too, but it would make I, a lot
it's
of ways.
It's time to stick my neck out. Siphon Filter reboot.
Whoa, that would be cool. I'd be hip.
I would like
that.
To see Next Gen SOCOM.
Nah.
I don't think that's good.
I think SOCOM has been buried. I think SOCOM has been buried for
disappointing.
I think they let SOCOM rot. They walked away from Siphon Filter somewhat inexplicably. Because there was Splinter Cell and Metal Gear, and I think they were just like, there's too many of these. But I think they could come out with something now and reboot that franchise.
I think it would be really cool.
People remember loving it more than they really did.
It's true.
It was great on the handheld.
Although they don't go down this road anymore, I tell you what, a PlayStation 4 Wipeout or a PlayStation 4 Jetmoto.
Studio got gutted, though.
Yeah.
But you could still do it. I mean, you just put together the right team to do it, especially a Wipeout, though. Mm-hmm. Like a PlayStation 4 Tour de Force Wipeout, amazing visuals game would be.
Who shows Ridge Racer is the major question.
Ridge Racer!
I just want there to be some new IP that
that aren't, isn't just, hey, it's a new FPS, it's a new, I would love to see, like, you know, we're really taking advantage of the system in a completely different way. And I mean, especially for Microsoft, I really want that new Kinect device to be really a game changer. I would love the fact, hey, if I have to have that goddamn thing watching me all the time, I really want it to be, there be a reason for it. You know, if they're checking my heartbeat, fucking use that data, make my game better, you know, go for it.
Okay, so what do you think they're going to show about that? Let's talk about the Microsoft stuff then. What do you think their bullets are?
Halo and Forza are a given, right?
I don't know that Halo is.
I don't know that. Yeah, Halo.
There'll be some hint of Halo, even if it's a teaser, right?
Maybe.
A logo.
Yeah.
I think a logo and a planet fall.
I think we get a proper Crackdown sequel.
Ooh, hopeful for that. Everyone's very hopeful
for
a Crackdown.
There was a Crackdown orb in the UI screenshot. In the bottom corner.
That's why people
one of the boxes that
like
was
going crazy
was,
for it. That makes sense. I mean,
finally a brute force sequel.
Oh, dude. That lizard dude.
They're internally developing Too Human 2.
You know, it'd be awesome to see in the press. It's not going to happen, but I'd love somebody to like trot out Witcher 3. Just as like, that'd be awesome.
It's still too niche.
I'm excited.
It is the only game that I think that they're showing.
And the cyberpunk thing.
That's not going to be at E3 at all, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as gung-ho for Microsoft because they've been playing stuff safe, and I feel like...
clearly a bunch of first-party stuff coming. I mean, it's not going to be, you know...
I have 3 appointments for unannounced game, and I asked for only core titles.
It's not going to be, you know, a version of Uno on Xbox Live Arcade that reads your heartbeat. It's going to be something more substantial than that, I hope.
I hope so, too. I want that to be, like, a real... way of, I've never really thought about games interacting with me.
You have any belief in any of the Rare rumors?
Oh, like some sort of
KI Gold?
Yeah.
I don't care about KI. No. I can't see a fighting game coming out as a
Cameo 2! Finally!
You can't, I mean, you can't.
It launched the last system to great success.
Guys, Perfect Dark 1.
Oh, dude, awesome. Yes.
It's the slowest play of all time. We put it out for 0. We knew what the title was going to be 8 years ago.
That's all you need to do. Disappointed all over.
Viva Pinata reboot on Xbox One.
I would be excited about Cameo. Ironically.
Why isn't there now Viva Pinata mobile game or iPad game?
I don't know.
Or at least a Surface. I don't know. Just something.
Yeah,
right?
Something. Let me fucking play that thing again, please.
I'm just going to reiterate one more time that I thoroughly enjoyed playing Cameo. And I don't care who knows it. It's a good game.
It was all
right. It was no Folklore.
Oh God, that game was garbage.
Folklore.
I'm thinking of the game that came out alongside Cameo. That was the because of the K, maybe.
No.
What was that called?
Folklore was on PlayStation 4.
Okay, on PlayStation 4.
I mean PlayStation 3.
No, what was the game that they came out alongside it? Where you were the guy with the staff and he had spiky hair.
I don't know.
Yeah,
that was bad.
Yeah. That's what you were talking about.
That was definitely bad.
Folklore has a K in it. That's what confused me.
All right. Anyone want to make any other bold predictions before we do our finishing moves?
I think Microsoft and Sony's philosophy for how games are going to function in terms of used game market and authentication and licensing, basically people licensing games, is going to be exactly the same. But Microsoft fell on the sword on having that shit come out and be confusing. And now Sony is... their strategy is going to be essentially the same, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's going to be exactly the same.
I agree. I think that's just the way the world is going to be, sadly. Predict which of these two press conferences you're going to come out of more jazzed.
I think Sony.
I would go with Sony.
Probably Sony, because, you know, Microsoft, I don't know what they're showing, really.
I think based on the fact that I guaranteed Last Guardian being there, I'm going to be most excited about Sony as well.
Oh, God, now everyone's exploding. Fucking fanboys. All right, fanboys, get ready your finishing moves. It's time to throw them on the table.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
All right, I'm going to start it off. Well, we may never see a proper Homeworld sequel, but I have had my hopes raised by hardware shipbreakers. Now, there's a video up on YouTube. We also have the story on Shaq about this. It's a group of ex-Relic Homeworld vets.
So good.
And they formed a studio called Blackbird Interactive. And it reads like Homeworld 3 if it was mixed with Ground Control.
Right. It's Homeworld over the land, basically. Yeah, and that video is stunning.
The video is absolutely stunning. And the best part of it is you sort of get that sense if you played Homeworld. You're like, this really looks like a lot of stuff did in Homeworld. And then they pull back at the very end to just kind of give you that little tease of, yeah, wait, they're playing. That's like this is in-game playing. Yeah. So the premise of it is pretty cool. You're on Mars in the future, and apparently for some reason ships tend to crash onto Mars, and so you are part of a team that goes out and competes with other teams to salvage them. So you have salvage operations, and then you have to go and like find these big hulking wrecks, set up perimeters around them, defend your team. It almost brings in sort of like a Dune element. Remember how like Dune 2000 was awesome because you know you always had to have like your harvesters out, but you had to protect them.
Dude, that's old school.
Right. So they could bring in a lot of cool old school RTS stuff, but put a whole new modern layer on it.
They put a date on it?
The beta is going to start this fall. It's free to play. Mm-hmm. It's going to be free to play, but if you want to sign up for the beta, which the signups are now open, you can go to blackbirdinteractive.com, or since it's free to play, they have a $100 first wave VIP package. It's like, how do we go from $60 games to free to play? Or you can pay $100, John, and be in the beta. Like, wait, I buy your game $100?
I think you can thank Kickstarter for that.
Jeez Louise. Like, anyway. Oh, and Flower is coming to Vita, so I'll finally have everyone will have a chance to spend $200 to play Flower. See, I was right.
Yay.
Slow burn.
All right, Mr. Kanade, why don't you go next?
Oh, man. I guess I can talk about the fact that I DM'd a game this last weekend of Pathfinder, which I had never done before. Has anybody had any experience with Pathfinder?
I played it. I saw it in the store this weekend.
It was a really interesting experience. It is sort of, they call it Dungeons & Dragons 3.75, and which is sort of because the 3.5 rules, they updated them. Why is that hilarious to you guys?
It's just like 3.75392 something.
All right. Right, because numbers have never been used in a weird way on this show ever. Okay. Anyway, 42. So 3.5 rules were Dungeons & Dragons. 4.0, they adopted a big change anyway. It's sort of between those two. Anywho, it was a really interesting experience. I have only DM'd one other time, and that was 4.0 rules, which are much simpler. And this was a real – I think it's really cool. I just bring it up so people check out. Paizo.com is sort of the home for Pathfinder. And they put out a tremendous amount of story content and really interesting scenarios that you can play that expand over like six episodes, these adventure paths. And it was a really difficult experience. It took a lot of preparation and work, but it was really interesting. And thought I'd mention it just so people might want to check it out.
Awesome. Zav?
Well, first, thanks, guys, for having me on the show again. It's always fun to hang out with you. We also do a podcast on joystick.com, Super Joystick Podcast. Every Thursday, we do live via Google Hangout, which you can watch around noon Pacific. And also, one thing I wanted to talk about very quickly was I've been playing The Last of Us beta demo, which is the demo that people got when they purchased God of War Ascension. I think that's going to be activated pretty soon. And want to tell you that there's two levels in it. One of them is not a great showpiece for that game. It's very heavy on you are hanging upside down and being swarmed by a bunch of enemies, and it's just a shooting gallery, which is not indicative of what that game is supposed to do very well. I've played other missions and other preview events that show it to be a really tense survival horror situation where you really have to scavenge. So one of those levels that you're going to play in that demo doesn't do a good job of showcasing that game. And I want to tell you that it has a lot of really great stuff in it. So if that turns you off to it, maybe read a couple previews and see what else is going to be offered when that game comes out.
John Davison, you get to bring her home for us.
Can I do a couple?
Yeah, sure.
So I wanted, as a game to try, if you're a fan of Flux, the card game, Star Flux is out now, which is a space-themed one, which borrows from just about every sci-fi trope imaginable. It's got Star Trek and Star Wars and all kinds of stuff in it, and it's really awesome. So, and they're quite cheap, and they're good. You can get pretty much anyone you know in and get them up to speed in a few minutes. It's really good. Up to, I think, 6 people can play it, so definitely worth trying out. I've been very quiet for the last 6 months, as a lot of people on Twitter have noted. So just so you know what I'm up to, we have a product called First, which will be coming out
hopefully mid to late summer, which is a video game community app for iPhone and Android.
I thought it was called F-Rist.
That'll be out in late summer. We're hoping that we're going to be able to do stuff around PAX at the latest, fingers crossed. But it'll be iOS and Android. We are starting to get stuff out already, so please come and subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/first4gamers. And I'm going to start a podcast soon.
So awesome.
In July, I'm starting a podcast. I think once we get through E3, I want to backlog some stuff. So rather than it being this kind of format, it's going to be a more kind of interviewee type thing.
Do you have a title yet?
Toying with first person as an idea, but I'm not 100% sold on it yet. But yeah, so I will be talking about that on Twitter and stuff as we get closer to it. But I'm starting to gather up the stuff for the episodes right now. So.
Awesome. All right, everybody. We need your input for next week because, yes, Dennis Dyack will be here. And I'm not even sure where to go with that. I just want to say like a couple of things up front is that we're going to try very hard to make it a good, interesting, entertaining podcast. It's not going to be just...
I think he'll be very nice.
I think he'll be very nice, too. So I'm like, I want to explore a couple of things. We definitely want to talk about, you know, what happened with their prior games and why people should have faith in them making a new game now, because it's definitely had a rocky road there. And then, of course, we have to talk about, and we already have laid the groundwork to talk about this one console future thing, which was fun. So,
but also his new thing, which I don't remember the name of.
Precursor.
Yeah.
No, the game. It's Shadow of the something or other.
Shadow of the Eternals.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, in all the, I mean, like, I think we collectively of gamers are actually making more of a big deal of his involvement in that than certainly he is.
Yes.
Right? Like,
we're going to have the CEO of Precursor Games here as well, which is not Dennis. So we'll be able to find out about that as well. So let us know what you want to know reasonably. Throw the questions in this week's show thread. I will collect all of those and bring them into one of the segments. That's it, folks. Thanks very much. Thanks, of course, as always, to the Atlantis Group Studio here in Santa Monica. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. Get real. Taking it over, baby. Check it out. Come on. They said I never made it. They called me Zip Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip hop bureau. There was a time when I was riding the vine, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swag with my sick ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up, for promoters on the scene. Find me out, put me up in the condo. No complaints when I'm done with my show. I'm grateful for every single one of y'all. Without your ears, I wouldn't be playing this game at all. We didn't invent it, but we're bringing it here. Get those hands to the sky. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.